gentlemen, to the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I got such a show for you today. I'm like giddy about what's going on right now. I don't know if you guys have noticed, things have gone a bit insane over the last month or so. And last night, I'm lying in bed at like 3 a.m. I can't sleep because I'm just scrolling. But it's not doom scrolling. It's the opposite of it. It's whatever the opposite of that would be. But my wife was, you know, taking care of the baby in the other room and came in and was like, is everything okay? Like, you're not usually up this late. And I'm like, yeah, a lot of stuff's happening. She's like, oh God. Cause, you know, she's not very political. She doesn't really keep track of things and we don't really talk about it in front of the kids that much. So, you know, she's like, oh God, you know, usually when I say something big's happening, it's like, yeah, you know, we're getting swatted. You know, it's like something crazy like that. But it's like, well, Trump got a peace deal between Gaza and Israel. She's like, oh, that's pretty awesome. I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. So I sort of explain that and how that works. It's weird. It's kind of interesting. And the more I think about it, the more I like it, actually. I think this is different than any other ceasefire that's been proposed in decades, perhaps. I think it's better than just going back to the status quo. I mean, the best other possible outcome for the Palestinians would be just an end to the war and Hamas still in charge, right? To just go back to where they were October 6th, 2023. And what would that end with? 5-10 years of peace at best, followed by another round of genocide? Like, that wouldn't be good. So now you've got this multinational approach with the Board of Peace. It's like, okay, this could actually work. This is really cool. And I'm like, well, but also, you know, today Trump held this Antifa roundtable and it was like the entire, I mean, it was literally the entire administration. It was Marco Rubio. It was the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense and head of the Department of Homeland Security. And there's his chief of staff. I mean, it was everybody in the Trump administration and like all my friends. It was like Jack Posobiec and Nick Sortor and Savannah Hernandez. And they're actually going after Antifa. So, you know, that was pretty awesome. That's a little bit of good news that's going on as well. And then I'm like, oh yeah, oh, by the way, remember how I tweeted the thing out about Charlie Kirk being scared that Israel is going to murder him and like Netanyahu's having to respond to and all this stuff? She's like, oh God, yeah. And I'm like, well, Candace Owens basically is releasing documentation that proves I was telling the truth and it's all like coming out. And that is a crazy development there, series of developments there. And it just like goes on and on and on. I also, weirdly enough, I'm like telling this all to my wife. I'm like, oh, and then another thing, you know, I retweeted somebody who was talking about how bad Attorney General Pam Bondi is. And I said, well, and you know, how much better Matt Gaetz would have been. And I said, well, you know, nobody seems to care, but you know, Matt Gaetz was targeted by an Israeli honeypot blackmail scheme. And you know, I'm just going to keep saying that because it never gets reported for some reason. And then who responds to me but Matt Gaetz himself? Saying, I do recall that. Yes, that is true. It's like, okay, that's pretty cool. Got Matt Gaetz confirming sort of my bombastic explanation of what happened with him. That's kind of cool. I kind of like that a lot, being friends with Matt Gaetz, finding out he follows me. The censorship is completely failing. The conversations happening right now are really unlike anything that's happened in my lifetime, honestly. And we have the classic gif of Ron Paul, it's happening. And it's like, for the first time in my life, something really is happening here. Something really is, something substantial, something that is changing the course of history. And strangely enough, in almost this supernatural way, Charlie Kirk's murder was the turning point. I mean, it was the turning point, and so much seems to have gone off the rails since that moment in a good way. Like for the globalists, it's gone off the rails for them. And we have the Charlie Kirk effect. Young Americans flood churches after Charlie Kirk's assassination. This is from Yahoo News. This is like mainstream news showing that church participation, purchases of Bibles has skyrocketed in the last month. It's been almost 1 month. Tomorrow will be 1 month since the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and this month has been insane. Oh, wait, did I even mention Comey got indicted? Did I mention that they came out saying that vaccines cause autism and are completely removing the COVID vaccine from the schedule? Like, we are having victory on every front, folks. This is crazy. It's happening.
Just keep your mouth shut.
Oh,
because you showed
up. Is that the way
you showed up? You voted.
You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. But we're not going to shut up. That's why, on top of the giant sale we've got going, veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not gonna shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to thealexshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and gear. Promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, and I'm telling you, I think things are looking up. I have not felt this white-pilled in a very long time. The peace agreement from Donald Trump, talk of peace between Ukraine and Russia now on the horizon, that's really just the tip of the iceberg. And if you go over the last month, everything from the ADL being expelled from the FBI. I mean, that's something that's been going on since the mid-60s and has finally come to an end. The transformation that the world is going through right now is something to behold. It really is crazy. And the more I think about it, the more things I remember. Like, oh, yeah, the CDC thing, the Tylenol autism thing. We got more on that today. Donald Trump just doubled down, is honoring Christopher Columbus by signing a new proclamation for Columbus Day. It's like, some of these things might seem symbolic. They're not. I guess they are symbolic. They're symbolic of the Great Awakening that's going on, of the complete transformation. And so much of this has to do with just the shedding of the labels, the dissolving of the so-called authorities that have used their powers for so long to keep America and humanity at large in a state of learned helplessness. And like, genuinely, I said it not too long ago, and it did have to do with Leif Erikson Day too. Good. It had to do with Charlie Kirk's assassination as well. I said it shortly after that like, for a long time, we've been like Gulliver on the streets, on the beach, with the Lilliputians tying us down. And like 2016 or so is when we sort of woke up and looked around and went, wait, we're being tied down. Like, who are these people? What is happening here? We didn't quite understand it. But finally, we're starting to get up. It's taken 10 years from the realization of like a deep state, New World Order. This is crazy. Like, and there's been counterattacks and it's sort of gone back and forth. But finally, it feels like the Great Awakening is upon us. The mass of humanity is not just aware of what's going on, but is standing up to confront it. And this is such a powerful thing. And honestly, I could not sleep last night. I didn't fall asleep till like 5 a.m, which also made me realize I think we figured it out at InfoWars. I think this is the correct construction of our shows, because I was staying up late getting into some very esoteric, bizarre kind of metaphysical nonsense that you can only get into in the witching hour when everybody else is asleep. Meanwhile, Brianna Morello is waking up at 4 a.m. to get ready for American Journal. So it's like you start the day with somebody waking up early. She's got her boots on. She's putting her nose to the grindstone. She's pumping out incredible news right in the morning. Alex Jones, of course, in the middle, having a great time today, throwing sombreros around the studio. And then you're sort of your esoteric guide into the forbidden here at the end of the day. I think we figured it out. I think this is the right concoction we have going here. So again, it is funny that I'm like laying in bed scrolling through Twitter and I see Brianna Morello, you know, up and at him. Alarm's going off. Time to get started with the day. And I'm like, I should really go to sleep. I should really go to sleep and not spend my time painstakingly writing tweets about Pecos Bill. But that's what I did. And I think it was worth it, honestly. I think it's what I was meant to be doing. So Trump has forged peace in the Middle East. And I genuinely believe that this is going to be a historic moment in the Middle East. Now, a bunch of people really don't want this to be the case. Most people I feel that follow me really want this to not be true. They are very insistent that I realize that Israel probably won't stick to the ceasefire. It's like, yeah, duh. Would you think this is my first rodeo? Do you think I was born yesterday? Do you think I genuinely think that, you know, a ceasefire agreement is any barrier to, you know, Israel's freedom of action in the Middle East? They've had a ceasefire agreement with Lebanon for months. They're killing people daily. They're very aggressively trying to kill people as we speak because the ceasefire isn't fully, you know, completely agreed upon yet. You think I don't know that? Like, yes, that's obvious. Yes, Israel is untrustworthy. They're warmongers and they're bloodthirsty. Everybody recognizes that. So what? We just shouldn't have peace. So we shouldn't try to stop the genocide. We shouldn't celebrate a pause, however brief, of this brutal conflict. We shouldn't celebrate Hamas agreeing to a treaty along with all these other Arab groups with the potential to not just have a lasting ceasefire interrupting this conflict, but really planting the seeds for a complete change in dynamics of that whole area. Because, you know, Israel isn't trustworthy, so I guess we'd just never have an agreement with them. Never sign an agreement with them, never make peace, never even try to make peace. Like, what do you want? What exactly do you want? Do you think this is what Israel wants? Anybody out there, do you think that Israel has succeeded in its war missions? Hasn't defeated Hamas? Hasn't annexed Gaza? Hasn't driven all the Gazan people out of Gaza? Hasn't annexed the West Bank? Hasn't gone to full-fledged war with Iran or destroyed Iran by any means? I mean, they have completely failed on every front. The only thing you could possibly say that they succeeded in doing is potentially getting the hostages back, which was never their goal in the first place. If that was the goal, they could have ended the conflict on October 9th, 2023. So this is not what Israel wants. This was not designed or instituted by Israel. This is Donald Trump's plan that he's forcing on Netanyahu. I mean, when you have Benjamin Netanyahu coming to the Oval Office and being forced to sit down by Trump, given a phone and forced to apologize for bombing Qatar, you don't think that's a big deal? You don't think that's a bit of a change in circumstance to where we were before? And again, people keep shifting the goalposts. My goalpost was always, has always been rock solid. It's, I trust Trump to not send American troops into conflict in the Middle East, to not get involved in another widespread war with boots on the ground. And all of this goes back to the simple reasoning that the Greater Israel Project is the ultimate goal of the Israeli leadership. They do not have the manpower to achieve that. Therefore, they need American boots on the ground to fulfill their mission and provide the manpower they need to take out Iran and other, you know, area actors in order to dominate the Middle East as a sort of superpower. And I always said Trump would not do that. Trump will not go into that. He is not a servant of Israel. Yes, he's very friendly with Israel. Yes, he does a lot of what Israel wants. And I'm against that. But the point is that he will not start a war on Israel's behalf. He will not sacrifice the American people for the sake of Israel because he is not controlled by them. Okay? So that's the standard. And I'm right. And it's exactly right. And anybody telling you that this is somehow proof that Trump is in control of Israel, they don't know what they're talking about. This is not what Israel wants. And if Trump was controlled by Israel, he would not be spearheading this effort to get peace. It's as simple as that. So what are you talking about? What are the people talking about? Well, you know, this ceasefire won't hold. Maybe. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe people are like, oh, you're going to say fell for it again. Fell for what? I don't trust Israel to keep the ceasefire. Really? But it's in their interest to. But actually, if this peace deal goes forward, they will sort of be obligated to, because, well, what are the options here? Okay, there are only a couple options, right? Either Israel just keeps doing what it was doing, which is systematically eliminate the people of Gaza until it's so bad that they're forced to flee to Canada or Europe, which was the plan as early as, you know, 2023. Showed you the story yesterday where they were saying, you know, the plan is we're going to ship everybody in Gaza to Canada and Europe. Okay, well, that didn't happen, did it? Their plan was to annex Gaza completely. That didn't happen. I mean, nothing of what they wanted has come to pass. And so what are the options? Either they just keep doing that and they get what they want and Gaza is eliminated and they annex it completely and it just becomes full-fledged Israeli territory. simultaneously they do the same to West Bank, and they just, they complete that first step of the Greater Israel Project before spanning out farther. That was one option, and that's what would have happened if Trump was a total servant of Israel and was serving their interests. That's what they wanted to happen. That's what would have happened. The other, what would another option be? Just a normal sort of typical ceasefire to where Hamas stays in power, to where we just sort of reset to the diplomatic arrangement that existed before this latest iteration of the conflict? Well, we've seen that over and over and over. I mean, that's what you had in 2006 and 2016, I think it was. And then, you know, they called it mowing the lawn. They go in, kill a bunch of Gazans, let them rebuild for a couple years, kill them again, let them rebuild for a couple years. So we could have just entered back into that cycle. You know, that's another opportunity. Maybe, you know, in a different world, Trump says, hey, you just have to stop Israel. We just have to have peace. Hamas is going to, we're just going to revert back to where we were October 6th, 2023. Would that be a good thing? Would that be a positive outcome? To me, that would almost be the worst outcome, because then the Palestinians would be left to rebuild from the rubble without a lot of help, right? They'd still be considered run by a terrorist organization. So aid would be limited from certain countries who are afraid of, you know, crossing that line or committing that diplomatic taboo. They would have been able to rebuild in the rubble a little bit and try to, you know, scrape their lives back together, only to await the inevitable conflict renewing again. And that's not good. So what did Trump do instead? He got all these Gulf nations. He got Egypt and Qatar and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and all these people to sign on to this peace agreement and to promise to not only, you know, provide experts and people to rule the Palestinians for a, you know, predetermined time period, a temporary time period until you can get Palestinians are sort of apolitical there just to manage things. The word they use is technocratic. It's ruled by experts, basically. But what that means is that you're going to have all of these very, very, very rich countries pouring billions of dollars into Gaza to rebuild it with the Palestinians still living there, with the Palestinians still somewhat in nominal control of their own land and their own destiny, not being forced to go to Europe, not being killed outright. They're going to stay there, and they're going to be able to rebuild with an influx of money from all these Gulf states and from America. And so next time Israel wants to mow the grass, they won't just be killing a bunch of, you know, people in dirt houses and open air prison. They'll be having to destroy infrastructure that all of their neighbors spent billions of dollars to build. And that's going to be a much bigger ask. And it's going to be much more difficult to wage war against Gaza in the future when you have monetary industrial interests from all these other countries focused there. Like, this is a great thing. Honestly, the more I think about it, the more I think this is a great thing. Now, that being said, there's some creepiness about it. There's some weirdness about it. Tony Blair being involved, this Board of Peace, the technocratic thing. Like, okay, I don't want this to be just like, well, we're going to turn Gaza into a 15-minute city as an example to the rest of the world. There's going to be elements of that that I'm not a big fan of. But again, look at the options on the table. Look at reality. I guess people out there are just like, I'm not going to be satisfied till Trump nukes Israel. And it's like, okay, you know, put your money on that. See how that goes. It's just not going to happen. Look at reality. Look at the situation that we're actually in. Look at the actual potential outcomes of this. Can you come up with a better one? Can you come up with a better one? I'll tell you this. If I don't know exactly what to think about a situation, I'm going to go with the people on the ground. And the people on the ground, the Palestinians, the Gazans, are weeping with joy and chanting Donald Trump's name. I'm going to go with them. Unless the anonymous accounts on Twitter know more than the people in Gaza, like, I'm going to go with the people in Gaza. They feel like this is something we're celebrating. They feel like this is a victory for them. And I don't want them to be genocided anymore. Like, what is the possibility that this could be a trick? I don't even see it. I can't even fathom how this could be turned around, except, of course, as I said, there may be some weirdness with the global aspect of having a Board of Peace with international people ruling over it. But it's like, again, what's the other option? What was the other option? I don't see one. This seems like it came straight from Trump. And by the way, this is the outcome of an insanely dramatic saga over the last 10 months, if you've been paying attention. If you've been watching InfoWars, you know we've been following this every step of the way, from Signalgate and, you know, the revelations that people inside Trump's cabinet were communicating with Netanyahu directly right before negotiations, Mike Waltz getting fired for that, the Iran you know, pressure campaign, trying to get us into war in Iran, Trump having to thread that needle and look like he's bombing Iran, but actually was in communication with Iran and no actual real damage was done. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, this is the most insane drama the world's ever seen, and it's coming to a conclusion that I guess in the most moderate terms is not the worst one that could arise. Let's go to clip one here. This is the people in Gaza celebrating phase one of the peace deal, and I guess, you know, all the black-pilled, you know, doomer cons on X, no more than the people whose lives have just been saved. Let's watch.
Similar moments of joy unfolding inside Gaza as crowds of Palestinians cheered and chanted. After 2 years of war, an influx of aid and relief will make it to residents there.
Honestly, these are indescribable feelings. We can't believe it. But thank God the war has ended and we are alive. Honestly, we hope the war does not come back and for this to be really the end, with no death and destruction afterwards.
Remember now, we are just talking about phase one of this 20-point peace plan, but President Trump there from the White House saying he still expects Hamas to disarm in phase two. John?
So we'll see how that goes, and we'll have to, keep an eye on this. Obviously, Israel took this opportunity, and it's just what Israel does. I mean, there's no strategic impetus to, you know, bombing people when a ceasefire is already all but agreed to, but that's what they're doing, right? It's like, well, the ceasefire hasn't technically in place yet, so let's kill a bunch of civilians while we can. I mean, it's evil. It's sickening, and, you know, people are going, well, that ceasefire didn't last long. It's like, no, the ceasefire is not in place yet. It's about to be. Here's what Trump said about it. I'm very proud to announce that Israel and Hamas have both signed off on the first phase of our peace plan. This means all the hostages will be released very soon, and Israel will withdraw their troops to an agreed upon line as the first step towards a strong, durable, and everlasting peace. All parties will be treated fairly. So was this? Okay, this was yesterday. He posted this. This is a great day for the Arab and Muslim world, Israel, all surrounding nations, and the United States of America, and we thank the mediators from Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey who worked with us to make this historic and unprecedented event happen. Blessed are the peacemakers. Incredibly powerful stuff. Honestly, there's a lot of talk about the Nobel Peace Prize right now. I can't think of anybody who deserves it more. Let's go to clip three here. This is a Hamas spokesperson declaring the end of the war in Gaza and the reopening of the Rafah crossing. Let's watch.
Happy to announce that we have reached a deal for ceasefire to put an end to the aggression and also to proceed to a permanent ceasefire and the withdrawal of the army and to allow the aid to enter to Gaza and to open the Rafah crossing from both sides.
They're coming back. Israelis await return of Gaza hostages. Hamas is happy, the Palestinian civilians are happy, the Israelis are happy. The only people that aren't happy are like Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud party, who are going to try to throw a wrench in this thing and try to disrupt it. But they kind of don't have a choice. This is kind of their out, actually. They have pissed off all of their neighbors so badly, and now they pissed off Trump. And I wonder, again, if that has anything to do with Charlie Kirk. Genuinely, it seemed like things changed around that time. And maybe that's just because maybe Israel realized, like, maybe that was a wake-up call. Like, gee, we are not popular. We need to be handling things more delicately, maybe. But that would be interesting if that was the lesson they learned. Let's go to clip five here. Palestinians chanting. And we can go into six, too. I mean, these are the scenes in Gaza today. People are saying they're chanting Allah Akbar. Other people are saying they're chanting Donald Trump. But they're throwing the peace sign in the air, and they're chanting and celebrating joyously, literally crying tears of joy. And this one, we can bring up the audio because they are chanting Trump's name at a certain point in this. Dancing in the streets, celebrating. But I guess the Twitter people know more about this than these people. You know, I guess these people chanting and celebrating and crying tears of joy, they just don't know as much as the big brains over at X, who just, they know for sure that Trump is, an Israeli agent, and this must be a trick of some sort. Yeah, I'm going to go with the chanting, happy, celebrating victims of a genocide right now. I'm going to go with that they know more than you do, and they're happy that they're not going to be murdered anymore. So isn't that nice? Isn't that something to celebrate for anybody that isn't, you know, almost pathologically dedicated to seeing Trump as deceitful and bad. It's insane and it's great and it's wonderful and it's good. And of course, I'm not going to downplay it. Israel took the opportunity to massacre more civilians. We can go to clip 35 here. Israel is bombing civilians in Gaza despite both parties tentatively agreeing to a peace deal. Let's go to that video now. And you can see many of the people who came out because they, you know, were told a ceasefire had been reached, only to find that, well, it hasn't been fully agreed to yet, so Israel sent its tanks to, bomb the crowd. So, again, I'm not saying Israel is now a well-trained little puppy dog anymore. No, they're the same people that they were last week. And the same people that they were in November 2023 bombing hospitals and lying about it. Yes, we know they cannot be trusted with a ceasefire. Yes, we know their ambitions will not be quelled. But they've achieved nothing that they set out for in this war. They set up this whole war, allowing October 7th to happen, just verbatim. And like now, I mean, if this ceasefire sticks, you're going to see the trial of Netanyahu continue uninterrupted. You're going to see probably the investigation into October 7th finally come to a conclusion. They've been withholding the discoveries about that until the war could be finished. This is really a transformational moment right now. And unless Israel does something to just supremely mess it up, which they may very well do, but it ain't going to be Trump's fault. And there's no way to twist this current ceasefire into something other than a positive development. The only way this could turn out otherwise would be if they get the hostages back and then just, march into Gaza full force. But like, I really don't think they're going to do that. I really think the forces arrayed against them right now are becoming insurmountable with all the EU dropping them, refusing to supply them with anything, cutting off their trade. Netanyahu can't even fly over Europe. You know, when Netanyahu flies to America, he flies around Europe. Because if he flies over certain European countries, they will force his plane to land in order to arrest him. Do you understand the massive tidal shift that we're living through right now? And I wonder if Donald Trump declaring Qatar as a protectorate, or however, whatever he declared it as, remember he said, we are now treating Qatar as, it's under our protection and anybody attacking Qatar is going to have to deal with me. It's going to have to deal with America. Why wouldn't he do that around Gaza? Like, I wonder if him doing that about Qatar wasn't sort of a shot across the bow to Israel going, you agree to this peace deal, otherwise I'm just cutting you off entirely. I'm saying Gaza is now under American protection and anybody attacking them. Because that's what happened, right? Israel bombed the Hamas negotiators in Qatar, pissed off Trump. He forced Bibi Netanyahu to apologize. And then he said, Qatar is now under our protection. You're not doing that ever again. Why wouldn't he do that to Gaza? Why couldn't he do that to Gaza? And whatever allowed him to do it to Qatar perfectly applies to Gaza as well. Things are changing in a massively positive direction. And if people are looking askance at this, I understand you got the beaten dog syndrome. You've been lied to too much. You've been betrayed too often to just accept this. But look at the details. Look at the agreements. Look at the number of countries involved. Look at the promises made by these countries. Look at the backtracking that Israel's being forced to do these days. This is different than what has happened before. And I'm not vouching for Israel whatsoever, but I'm vouching for Donald Trump. And I'm saying we were right to trust Donald Trump to put America's interests over Israel, to not bend the knee to Israel when it really matters, when it really counts, when the chips are on the table. And it all comes down to this. Amazing stuff. God bless Donald Trump. God bless the peacemakers.
You're not going to talk to me and talk over me, non-New York residents, because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, these will be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, but I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more.
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Bigotry will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, this is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Honestly, just trying to wrap my head around everything that's going on right now. I mean, there's so much insanity. It's hard to even wrap your mind around. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, by the way. There's a mega sale going on honoring the founding of InfoWars all the way back in 1997. So now shirts, every shirt on the store is just $19.97 in honor of that InfoWars founding in 1997. Plus, CMOS gummies are 50% off. InfoWars has been fighting the globalist agenda since its launch in 1997. To celebrate 28 years of fighting tyranny, we're slashing all shirts on thealexjonesstore.com to just $19.97. It's a limited time. This epic sale ends midnight on Sunday. Do not wait. They're flying off the shelves. And if you want to get especially one of the new shirts, they are selling out quickly. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, supercharge your health with CMOS gummies, now 50% off. The Irish CMOS gummies, one of my favorite products. I take the CMOS gummies and the Shilajit gummies every day. And just a few days ago, I started doing the power drive combo, methyl drive and power plant, on the advice of Rex Jones. So I'm 2 days into that, and I'm already kind of feeling it. I'll let you know how that goes. But if it's anything like every other product we sell at thealexjonesstore.com,
It's going to knock my socks off, so I'm ready for it. CMOS 50% off plus every shirt on sale, $19.97, thealexjonesstore.com. Sign up for the VIP club. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, again, I want to talk more about this Middle East peace deal, assuming that it comes to fruition and that the stages are deployed as they are designed to be deployed, that we don't get into, you know, some sort of nuclear conflict with Iran, which, again, seems to be what Netanyahu was trying to push over the last little while. And I can show you some clips from that. But it seems like everybody except for Benjamin Netanyahu is thrilled about this peace deal, including President Putin of Russia. Let's go to clip number 7 here. This is President Vladimir Putin talking about Trump's Gaza peace plan. Let's watch. He says the situation in the Middle East, then on the background, humanitarian tragedy and catastrophe in Gaza, where there's an active search for options to end the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. President Trump put forward a famous initiative, and how did you see Russia supported them almost immediately? We see what's happening now here, achieved, according to information from the media, final decision. We really hope so. These initiatives of the President of the United States will actually be implemented in practice. This initiative, from the very beginning, was generally positively received from Arab and Islamic world in general. Main two, I repeat again, it will all be realized. I emphasize, Russia has always proceeded and proceeds from that. How to solve the Middle East problem can only be done by political means. We are naturally ready to support any peace efforts aimed at that, to stop the bloodshed and bring calm to the region. I think you will agree with me. It was the position of the Soviet Union, and so she inherited all the republics, former USSR. We believe what main indispensable condition for long-term stabilization and resolution of all issues related to this difficult problem, main condition is the creation of an independent Palestinian state. Who would have thought that 2 years of devastating war against Gaza would end in a Palestinian state? Putin voices support for Trump's Gaza plan, sees creation of Palestinian state as solution. So Trump's for it, all the Arab nations are for it, Hamas is for it, Putin's for it, which means Iran is for it. Now, Iran might actually have a seat at the table here. They were mentioned as one of the countries being involved in the Board of Peace, which, again, do you think Israel wants that? Do you think that's what their plan was for the end of the Gaza war? This is devastating. Oh, Letitia James has been indicted? Well, what do you know? The hits keep coming. Letitia James, the New York Attorney General who defeated Trump in court by cheating, has been indicted. Scroll down, guys. I want to read this story. All right, bring it in. This is breaking news. We got to get this out ASAP. DOJ indicts Tish James. Oh, Tish, you fool. You absolute cow. Attorney General Letitia James was indicted Thursday in Alexandria, Virginia, as President Donald Trump's Justice Department continues to pursue charges against his political opponents. Two sources familiar with the matter told CNN. James had been under investigation since May over a 2023 mortgage she took out to help her niece buy a home in Norfolk, Virginia. The charges come as Trump continues to call for his enemies to be prosecuted in court. Former FBI director, we'll have to do some real-time editing here, as we often do with the mainstream media. Let's see. The charges come as Trump continues to call for not his enemies, criminals. Well, what else could we say? Criminal Democrat scum. Maybe that would be a better descriptor. They're not Trump's enemies. They're enemies of humanity. They're enemies of America. They're enemies of the rule of law, and they're getting what's coming to them. The charges come as Trump continues to call for criminal Democrat scum to be prosecuted in court. Former FBI Director James Comey pled not guilty Wednesday to allegedly making a false statement in a congressional proceeding. The Justice Department has also opened an investigation into former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton, California Democrat Senator Adam Schiff, and others. James's relationship with Trump has been adversarial for years, as James campaigned on promises to investigate Trump and ultimately won a civil fraud case against Trump, his adult sons, and his real estate business. That sentence, like this sentence alone, discredits everything Letitia James ever did to Trump. The relationship has been Trump with the adversary over the years as James, this Letitia James, campaigned on promises to investigate Trump. Okay, so what does that mean? What does that mean? That means the entire prosecution was fraudulent. That means she was elected on the promise to go after Trump despite not having a crime to pin him on yet. I mean, it's ridiculous. She literally went out and said, vote for me. I'll get Donald Trump on something. They voted for her. She went through everything Trump had ever done. The only thing she could even find was a loan he had taken out and paid back already, for which the bank had no objection, for which the bank had, you know, provided their own due diligence and said, this is no problem. She found a loan that Trump had already paid off, said, actually, the thing that you put up as collateral for the loan is worth more than you said it was, or worth less than you said it was. Therefore, that's fraud. Impacted nothing, was completely meaningless. A ridiculous process crime that isn't even a process crime. If he, you know, put the wrong price on Mar-a-Lago, the bank providing him the loan would have seen that and objected to it. So she makes her entire political existence, you know, dependent on, yeah, there's a statue of her honoring her in New York City. She makes her entire political career on going after Donald Trump despite not having anything to charge him with, rigs the system, gets a biased jury, a biased judge, completely manipulates the actual law as it stands to get something on him, and she's fat too. This is a political witch hunt, and I believe she should be ashamed of herself, Trump testified. You believe this political hack back there, and that's unfortunate. Completely absurd. Now I've got videos, maybe I'll go to them today, where, like, really all they got out of that was the ability of deceitful people to tell morons that Trump was a convicted felon. That's what they got out of it, is that they get to say, well, but Trump's a convicted felon, and they rely on the lack of information of your average American to think that that's true, when in reality it was all a giant con game, as was obvious to anybody who paid even a little bit of attention. So that's fantastic news. That's very good news. It's like the very least you could charge her with, but it's something. And we're moving forward, and we're moving in that direction. And that's wonderful to see. And she deserves to go to jail for a lot of things. But sure, get her on the mortgage stuff. That is as good as anything, in my opinion. Absolutely incredible. Now, there are other things going on that I don't know exactly what to make of this. There's a character that started cropping up in my sphere of awareness recently that I'd love to talk to. I reached out to him on X. So if you wouldn't mind, go boost my tweet, asking if he wants to go on InfoWars. His name is Kirill Dmitriev. He is the special envoy from Russia to America, and he also runs the like Russian sovereign's wealth fund, which is a big deal. Like, he's a very high up person in Putin's regime. And he responds true to this statement. President Putin's special envoy, Kirill Dmitriev, says former U.S. President Biden provoked the war in Ukraine to cover up his family's corruption. The truth is coming out and justice must follow. Not only that, he's been deliberately and explicitly Q posting. He's been posting QAnon posts and saying, yes, this is true. This is what's going on. Which would be one thing if he was a QAnon TikTok star, but he's the manager of the Russian private wealth fund. He's a special envoy to America. He's actually high up in the Republic, in the Russian government. And he's telling everybody that basically there's a secret alliance between Putin and Trump to defeat the New World Order and take down the globalists. Like, this is crazy. What's going on here? And Anna Paulina Luna is in cahoots with him, I suppose. She says, I've officially confirmed a meeting with Kirill Dmitriev, special envoy to the president of Russia, for later this month. It's important, not just for my fellow Americans, but for the world, that we continue to foster relationships and conversations of peace and trade between Russia and the United States, as President Trump has so openly called for. Our two countries do not need to be enemies. Allies in trade benefit everybody. I know I'm not the only member of Congress or America who believes that maintaining the open dialogue is essential. As elected officials, we owe this not just to our own people, but humanity, to ensure the talk of peace and willingness to extend an olive branch be maintained and never ends, as the war's the default to failed policy. My colleagues and I look forward to this meeting. So that's pretty interesting as well. Trump, of course, has been talking fairly bombastically and aggressively about supplying Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. Today, I saw him responding to a question about defending Finland in case Russia attacks Finland. And he's like, I guess we would, because they're in NATO, but like, that's not going to happen. So don't worry about it. And in the Russian media, they're saying the goodwill brought about by the summit in Alaska has all but dissolved at this point, which is, you know, concerning to see, not a great outcome. But it looks like things are being put into place for normalization of the relationship between Russia and America, which is wonderful to see. Very wonderful to see. I mean, and it just goes on and on. And again, it's, you know, I wonder how much of this is intertwined. I wonder how much of this impacts other aspects. I can't help but feel like something really major happened with Charlie Kirk's murder, his assassination. And I do think it has to do with the unveiling and the uncovering of Israeli influence, and the way that they influence people in America, the methods that they use, the intolerance that they display. I think whether or not Israel had anything to do with the murder of Charlie Kirk, I think the accusation set them back on their heels. And again, I explained this at the time. In fact, maybe we'll go to the video, because I went on Liberty Lock Pod with Clint Russell a day or two after the murder of Charlie Kirk. And it was sort of the only appearance I did about my tweet beforehand. And I laid out in about 2 minutes my thinking of how Israel might be considering all of this. And I think I kind of nailed it. I think I actually nailed it entirely. This was a month ago almost at this point. And I nailed it. I mean, I'm just be honest with you. I completely nailed it. And everything that you've seen since then has been confirmation of what I just sort of assumed from the bits of evidence that I had seen. And so now, as you have Candace Owens totally setting traps for these people who claim to be speaking for Charlie Kirk, saying, you know, they were pressuring Charlie and Charlie was moving away from Israel and was sick of being under Israel's thumb and was becoming anti-Israel. And they came out and said, no way, that's not happening. I mean, for weeks, they've reiterated that that's completely baseless, total hogwash, and it's, you know, anti-Semitic and maybe signs of mental illness that she would be saying this. And then she releases the receipts. And then they say, those are fake. There's no way those are real. I can't believe she would believe, you know, expect us to believe this. This is outrageous. And then Charlie Kirk's right-hand man, Andrew Colvett, goes on TV and says, actually, those are true. I took that screenshot. So it's like lie after lie is being exposed in the most blatant way. And I wonder, you know, we've seen so little from Trump. People are pissed at Trump. They're kind of like horrified at Trump's lack of reaction to the death of Charlie Kirk. But it seems like his position on Israel has become a lot more aggressive since this happened, right? I don't know why the crew likes this clip of Candace. From InfoWars, Candace Owens set to release proof of that Charlie Kirk feared for his life after he broke with Israel days before he was killed. And of course, Alex covered this with Elijah Schaefer. And on that note, before we go to this video, because I do want to go to this video just because I keep seeing videos that people are posting like today about, you know, Charlie Kirk in Israel. And they're just now discovering what I laid out a month ago. Again, I didn't have any particularly special access to information. I was just noticing things and making observations and coming to conclusions. And a month on, I think, you know, you'll appreciate just how right I was. That's clip 33. But on the note of Elijah and Alex, again, because again, I saw people online going, oh, Alex just needs to, I guess Elijah says something about PTSD, like, oh, Joe, Alex, you have PTSD about this. You need to get over and just talk about it. And it's like, can you not understand how a man who has prosecuted the information war on pure Americana for 30 years and has had devastating success in prosecuting this war and navigating these incredibly dangerous waters, again, off pure Americana, taking nothing but the founding fathers, their symbolism, their heritage, their beliefs, pure Americana, pushing that for 30 years, having unprecedented success, shattering the paradigm, awakening the world in a lot of ways, popularizing terms that we use without even thinking about it now, false flag attack, you know, any of these sorts of things. For 30 years, he prosecutes a war on pure Americana, and in the last 5 minutes, a bunch of people show up and go, ah, no, we figured it out. It's the Jews. We should be Nazis. You don't think he'd be a little bit annoyed at that? You don't think he'd look a little bit suspiciously at that and go, and I'm not saying that's what Elijah Schaefer's doing, but a lot of people are like that. Just arrived 5 minutes ago, decided they figured everything out, and Alex is wrong because he doesn't say it's the Jews and we should all be Nazis. And it's like, you have no respect for what the man has put in. You have no ability to empathize with somebody who has poured their life and soul and fortune into this fight, only to see at the last minute brand new scumbags that had nothing to do with the rise of this movement try to hijack it for themselves. Do you not understand why that wouldn't be greeted with happiness and you know, welcoming? Oh, we're Nazis now. Okay, I guess I was wrong for the last 30 years of massive success I've had. Like, come on, guys, have some respect for the things that InfoWars has done, that Alex Jones has put into, and understand that it's a trick. It's a false dichotomy. Nazis versus Jews is the trick they want you to fall into. And you should probably listen to Alex Jones about that. He knows more than you do. That's my note on Alex Jones on all that. But let's go to this video real quick. So again, I genuinely think this was the turning point. I think it was Charlie Kirk's murder. I'm not going to do it. You can go find it on my X. I retweeted it on my X. Maybe I'll post it again. I just feel weird playing my own clips on the show. I know, but there's like a million other things to get. All right, they say it's only 2 minutes. All right, clip 33. This is me a month ago being right about everything, and just look at how reality has tracked to my prediction since then. Let's watch. So then I'm thinking about it from Israel's perspective and going, first of all, without my tweet as context, it kind of doesn't make any sense, because Charlie Kirk is the pro-Zionist guy. He is the pro-Israel guy. He holds exactly that banner, and he's known as that. So to say Israel is going to kill him, that genuinely doesn't make any sense. But then when you think of it as, what if he was going in that direction? What if they were listening in to him and he was in communications with people saying, hey, I think I'm going to go this direction, and they knew his intentions or saw this pattern? Then suddenly it's like, okay, here's this pro-Zionist guy with this incredibly powerful platform that they built, by the way, that Charlie has thanks to them. So if he's going to take what they gave him and turn it against them, that could literally destroy Israel, because the youth is people they're most concerned about. They're bringing over all these under 30 people to Israel to train. They're very concerned about the youth perception of Israel. Charlie is the dude when it comes to Israel. He is such a powerful component of their apparatus. And so then you think, like, all right, we can't let him turn. That's just like totally unacceptable. And if he starts to turn and we take him out, then we'll be blamed. So, you know, you take him out before he ever really genuinely turns. And then he's a Zionist martyr, and maybe you blame it on a Palestinian, and then you get more anti-Semitism stuff, and you unify the right, and they stop criticizing your guy, anymore. Man. I don't know, man. So again, Israel was never my top suspect until, you know, I've spent 24 hours thinking about it, and I'm like, it's not unreasonable. It's not even out of the question in terms of, would Israel do this? I mean, it's like, guys, they've done it 14 times since Clinton and I started this conversation. So, you know, it's like, it's in their wheelhouse. And if nothing else, it just shows how much they needed Charlie Kirk. Cause man, nobody's going to be defending them anymore. And their reputation is in the toilet, obviously. Yeah. And it's only gotten worse for them since then. And that's exactly what happened, right? What did I say? Well, he wasn't, you know, anti-Israel now, but what if he was going that way? What if they were in communication with him or were watching his communications and knew that he was involving himself with people they didn't want? And that's exactly what's happened. So, I mean, again, is there any tangible evidence that Israel did it? No. But are they acting a bit suspiciously? Yeah. Is there circumstantial evidence? Yes, absolutely. Candace Owens is producing more every single day, and it's absolutely fascinating. But even more than that, it's given people the courage to stand up against this pernicious influence in our government. And it's on top of the genocide, and, you know, people are moving against AIPAC, moving against ADL. I mean, you have now candidates proudly making videos where they announce they will not be taking AIPAC money. And they say this in front of their audience, and the whole audience gets to their feet and cheers. This is, it's becoming more popular to be against AIPAC than to be with them, to the extent that, just like I told you also, I think I said this 2 days ago, when they realize that AIPAC is losing popularity, they're going to launder their donations through a different pack. It's not going to be AIPAC anymore. It's going to be something else. And it's going to be the MAGA pack, right? Kentucky MAGA. That's AIPAC going after Thomas Massie, but they don't want it to look like it's coming from Israel, so they call it Kentucky MAGA. There's been another discovery of this type of deception with a organization called 314, I believe it's called, and they basically got completely busted laundering AIPAC money through this organization because they know how unpopular it is. Clip number 14 here. This is, yeah, AIPAC funneling money through this other organization. Let's go to clip 14.
Our undercover reporter wanted to learn more about how funding is secured for congressmen.
Actually, you know, this is a different one. So I want to play that as well. That's a clip from The Lobby, the AIPAC documentary that I've been telling you about for 4 years at this point, and you should probably go watch. But also, just on that note, the United States has spent $33.7 billion on Israel since the Jewish state began its war on Gaza 2 years ago. According to a report, of that total, $21.7 billion was direct military aid to Israel, while the remainder covered broader Middle East operations, including actions in Yemen and Iran conducted on Israel's behalf. $33 billion. Prior to October 7, 2023, the entire Israeli military budget was only $25 billion. $33 billion could pay for a million new high schools. I mean, it's insane how much money we've poured into this. And, you know, I don't know what we're going to get from that. I don't know if there is a way to, get anything back for what we've spent so far, but at the very least, we're trying to put a stop to it. We don't have quite have time, but Tucker goes into this talking about how a quarter of THAAD missile batteries in existence are in Israel today as just part of the, you know, overwhelming weaponry that we've sent there. That means that we are less safe. It means we don't have those batteries to protect us. And that's the case with a lot of stuff. I mean, they don't have, we don't have weapons anymore. From between Israel and Ukraine, we've wasted more than we should. All right. The crew's bringing up all these examples of people denouncing AIPAC. They are all on the left. They are all scumbags. That's not my point. My point is that people are moving away from AIPAC because they've become a toxic brand, just like the ADL became a toxic brand and got kicked out of the FBI, just like the SPLC is becoming a toxic brand and is breaking with the FBI. All of this stuff is coming out. I'll get into what Matt Gaetz says about this on the other side. And then we're going to get into the true insanity of the left, because it's something to behold.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I didn't know he was taking our ultramethylene blue. So I said, oh, with all our guests, we asked him to take it. And you just gave me your brief testimony. So I would look, because I mean, this isn't BS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. takes it. It's good for your cells. If you're on SSRIs, you can't take it. It's very serious. We have the strongest, and it funds this operation. You want to get it at thealexshowstore.com. Medical grade, USP grade, the best. Ultramethylene blue. So you sort of give me your testimony saying you love it. I said, hold on. I don't want to know. I want you to tell people on air, William. So when did you get it? What was the effect?
So I've been a health nut, people call me, all my life.
Well, you look super young for your age. So.
And so I thank God that I've been healthy. And when I take most supplements, a lot of people say, oh, you'll feel, you know, this big surge. And normally I don't. I just think, okay, I'm doing something right for my body and for my brain. And with methylene blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy. It helps me I keep a lot of late hours. I'm talking to people over in Europe or over in other continents. And so my biorhythms get all messed up. And so it really helps me with my sleep. And
well, be honest, though, because you, so you're saying your doctors, others told you to do it, just like mine did 6 years ago. I got it, USP. Didn't really have the effect. My wife liked it, so she's been on it. We tried different brands. This one, I'm not trying to differentiate. It's just true. It's been way stronger for me. If you do have other brands you took that are as good or better, I want to know, because there's something better, we'll go with them.
I haven't found anything better.
Now, back to our program.
All right, welcome back, folks. Again, you know, we're seeing this tidal shift. We're seeing this slow but steady alteration of the landscape in really profound ways. And it's not all about Israel. A lot of it's focused on Israel. And a lot of it has to do with just the censorship not being as effective, people not feeling the need to, you know, hold back on describing things that they know because of, you know, misplaced guilt about things like the Holocaust. Like, people are just sort of over that, and they're seeing the desperation with which Israel is paying influencers $7,000. By the way, did you guys see that if you ask Grok to translate 30 pieces of silver from the time of Jesus into modern currency, they say it's worth about $7,000. So the people tweeting for Israel for pay are literally getting 30 pieces of silver. It's like there's something happening here. There's something going on that's like, why are all these things aligning so strangely? I'm not really sure. Matt Gaetz is somebody who, you know, ever since he sort of got screwed over for the attorney general job, has been pushing the envelope on what he's, you know, talking about and willing to say. And he's gone even further now. Again, I was shocked at this. Derek Evans wrote, everyone now seeing why the deep state refused to confirm Matt Gaetz as attorney general, but why they are willing to confirm Pam Bondi. And I responded to that saying, I'm just going to keep reminding everyone that Gaetz was targeted by an Israeli blackmail honeypot scheme, even though no one seems to care. To which Matt Gaetz himself responds, I do recall that. Yeah, I bet you do. I bet it was horrible to go through that. Seems like that'd be a bigger story. Seems like the reason we can't get anything done is because Pam Bondi is ineffective, and she should not be there because Matt Gaetz should be there, but he was prevented from getting into office because they dredged up this story about him having sexual impropriety in his past. But that was an Israeli honeypot blackmail setup where they're trying to extort him for $20 million on the basis that they needed that to save an Israeli spy in Iran. I mean, it's like a scheme that they ran over and over again. You should look into it. But he goes even farther. And on TimCast, ex-GOP Congressman Matt Gaetz, the story from Infowars.com, says AIPAC had politicians wear QR codes to make on-the-spot donations. Basically, like they're kind of like, I don't know, farm animals almost. Let's go to clip 30 here. This is Matt Gaetz while he was hosting the Tim Pool Show. Let's watch.
Initially, I resented the fact that there was no appreciation for nuance. Like if you asked any questions about any decision of the Israeli government in any place regarding settlements, regarding Gaza, whatever, you were like, You had deviated from the script. And I just, in any policy area, I had resentment over that. And then I saw the way the AIPAC worked. And that was weird for like a country lawyer like me. I remember my first AIPAC reception, and like your fundraiser tells you you have to go, and your chief of staff tells you you have to go, your committee chairman all tell you have to go. And you get there and you wear this name badge, and I remember there's a QR code on it. And what we were supposed to do was go talk to donors, and then if they liked you, they scanned your QR code to make a donation, like on the spot. And so can you just imagine how demoralizing that is to like be told that your job for the next several hours to go chat people up, hoping they would scan you like a can of tomato soup on the way out of the meeting?
So that must not have felt good. We can take it down. I mean, you know, I can understand as a congressman how that would be humiliating, how it would make you feel like a product to be purchased. But can you imagine how good it feels for the AIPAC people? I mean, the flip side of that is imagine having these congressmen you know, kowtowing to you, begging you for some spare change, and you get to take out your phone and scan their queue. I mean, it must feel good. Must feel really good. You know, if you're evil, you know, if you're one of these people and you're evil, then yeah, I bet that feels good. Now, they deny this. AIPAC denied Gates' claims about social media posts. The accusation about our fundraisers is, of course, a lie. Barcodes are for security purposes. And Matt Gaetz responds, yeah, I don't know, AIPAC. I read something in history books about putting codes on people, and that wasn't very good. That was kind of bad. Hey, at least it was just on a name tag, not like tattooed on the back of your neck. But hey, different strokes for different folks. And he actually gets into more of this. We'll get back into AIPAC on the other side and how they're hiding their contributions because of how unpopular they are.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you showed
that,
up.
Is that the way to
you
talk?
You showed up. You voted.
You can extend it right
a
now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. We're not going to shut up. That's why on top of the giant sale we've got going, Veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not going to shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to thealexshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and gear, promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. Second hour is on. In the next segment, I'll be joined by Seamus from Freedom Tunes. Very excited to talk to him. He's on a run right now. He's doing his own show, which I'm very excited about that. He's fundraising for it, but he's doing like, I think he's hosting Timcast after us. He was doing Jack Posobiec's show before us. So he sandwiched us in, and we're going to be very happy to have him. And I've got so many videos about the insanity of the left in general, but in particular, this woman, Katie Porter. I'm so excited to show you these videos. It is something to behold, folks. So stay tuned for that. Trust me, you're going to want to stay tuned for that. But just like I predicted, just like I said, the way you defeat these organizations like AIPAC is either get them to register under FARA, as they should be registered and should have the entire time. If, you know, somebody hadn't killed JFK, then they probably would be, but they're not registered under FARA, which allows them to, you know, get a lot of benefits that are withheld from most foreign lobbying groups. But if you can't register them under FARA, then you need to make them unpopular. You need to make what they offer less valuable than what denouncing them offers, right? By denouncing them, you get popular. People trust you. They know that you're not the servant of a foreign state. You're not happy about what Israel's doing, so you're probably not a big fan of genocide. It's like a badge of honor now. Now, unfortunately, the right wing is not going to learn this lesson and embrace this, except for people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey and others who are targeted by AIPAC. Most Republicans, for some godforsaken, ridiculous reason, think that this is somehow an opportunity for them. Literally, they're like, oh, the Democrats are losing AIPAC, so we're going to get there. And it's like, it's retarded. So, you know, it's a bummer that it's all these left-wingers coming out with this. And I just told the crew this. I gotta do something about this James Tallarico character. I should have done a long time. I could see early on, this guy was like printed at a CIA shop. This guy's straight out of the, you know, Langley laboratory that produced Barack Obama. He basically mimics Barack Obama and everything, and he is one of the most dishonest actors I've ever seen. He made his whole thing about being against Christian nationalism and demonizing Christians. And then I'm at the store over the weekend with the family, and I see this guy wearing a shirt. It's a cool shirt. The shirt says something like, it's time to start flipping tables. And I'm like, tight. I'm like, all right, I like this guy. I like this guy. It's a reference to Jesus flipping the tables at the temple. It's a nod to where we are in our, you know, current paradigm. And so I see him like three times. On the third time, we're like walking through the parking lot with my family, and I'm passing him. I go, hey, that's a really cool shirt, man. Like, where's that shirt from? He turns around and says, James Tallarico on the top. And I'm like, well, what? That guy, the guy who's made his whole political career about being against Christians, talking about how Christians shouldn't have their views represented in politics, how, you know, your religion's for at home, don't bring it over here. He's quoting Jesus on a shirt about flipping the tables when this dude serves the exact masters that he's pretending to fight. So when I start yelling at the guy in the parking lot, my wife's like, we don't have time, we gotta go. And I'm like, that guy's a jackass, do not trust him. Cannot believe you're wearing that shirt. Like, it made me so mad. So I gotta tell you about James Tallarico one of these days, but he's basically Beto 2.0, but he's completely propped up by the system. But he's one of these people going, oh, I don't take AIPAC money. Well, it's probably like Beto O'Rourke, where he makes his whole campaign, I don't take PAC money, and then you go to Open Secrets, number one contributor, it's a PAC. So, I mean, these people are just dishonest as the day is long, but they're perfectly willing to adopt a phrase of Jesus, a quote from Jesus, in order to defeat Christians, right? Because they're satanic at the heart of it all. But not to get too distracted, let's go to clip number 14 here. Here's how AIPAC is dealing with their unpopularity these days. Let's watch.
Our undercover reporter wanted to learn more about how 15. Funding is secured.
On your network, got I'm
sorry.
In.
Sorry. All right, I gotta find the actual one. But I don't know. I got so many AIPAC things here. I guess let's go to clip 14 for now, because it's totally pertinent. But this is the way AIPAC used to work. This is from a documentary called The Lobby on Al Jazeera. There's two versions of The Lobby. There's The Lobby UK. There's The Lobby US. Both of them tracking AIPAC in America, whatever the equivalence is. Yeah, this is the one I want to watch. Okay. All right, this is the one. Thank you.
2 weeks ago, two candidates in an Oregon congressional race held a rare joint press conference where they leveled a charge against a third candidate. Take a listen to the local news coverage.
Moving on, we wanted to bring you an update now to a story we told you about last night, the heated three-way race for the 3rd Congressional District in Oregon. That's Earl Blumenauer's seat in Congress. Last week, two of the candidates, Sushila Jayapal and Eddie Morales, held a press conference accusing the other candidate, Maxine Dexter, of taking dark money washed through a super PAC called 314 Action. They claimed, without any evidence, that 314 Action could be a front for far-right donors looking to take them out of the race.
The candidate getting all that dark money support is Maxine Dexter, a state representative and local doctor. At a debate, she was pressed by her opponent, Eddie Morales, to name the source of the funding. Take a listen.
I want to spend the last second of mine asking Maxine, will you look at the camera and tell Action, 304 Action, to disclose their donors before May 20th?
Do you want me to?
Yes, I mean, sure, but answer the question.
It is, I mean, absolutely. They are legally obligated to disclose
before
their...
Before May 20th, before the day before the election.
Eddie, you understand as well as I do.
This is a public forum. You can tell them in
this
public.
It is a public forum, and I believe in discussion and deliberation.
Is Big Pharma funding you?
Absolutely not. I've never taken...
Know?
Okay, I have to stop you there. I need to let Maxine have a final word here. I will just say that this entire thing is frankly absurd. I have put my values on record. I have 4 years of voting records on progressive values. I have stood firm with people who have supported me and against people who have supported me. I took an oath of office, and I've taken an oath as a physician to keep people at the center and do no harm. My integrity is frankly being questioned here, which is absolutely offensive.
All right, well, we don't want to offend anybody. And of course, anybody accused of anything without evidence ought to have a chance to defend themselves. So let's take a closer look. And to be fair to our accusers, it did look off. Random state representatives don't generally find themselves on the winning end of millions of dollars of super PAC spending for no reason. And Sushila Jayapal, the candidate in the middle there, is the older sister of Pramila Jayapal, one of AIPAC's most concerted adversaries on Capitol Hill and the powerful chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. AIPAC had been unsuccessfully recruiting a challenger to Pramila Jayapal in her Seattle district. Now, looking for clues as to who might be funding the dark money operation, you could turn to the news outlet Jewish Insider, which does a great job covering congressional primaries through an Israel-Palestine prism. In early December, Jewish Insider flagged Sushila Jayapal's candidacy as alarming to Israel advocates, elevating the potential candidacy of Dexter as a strong opponent. So after a few days of reporting, I confirmed it was indeed AIPAC, and I found two sources who had knowledge of how specifically AIPAC had begun playing in the race without disclosing its role. It was routing money, indeed, through the pro-science, quote-unquote, pro-science super PAC called 314 Action Fund. So I published that story on May 10th at The Intercept. Now, here's our friends at the local TV station again with 314's response.
But Jaya Paul and Morales are demanding that Dexter tell 314 Action to reveal the donors now. They say they think they could be related to pro-Israel group AIPAC. And some recent reporting from the news outlet The Intercept supports that claim. We reached out to 314 Action Group yesterday, and they did respond to us. We asked if MAGA Republicans are among their donors. They didn't outright say no, but they did say that they've spent tens of millions of dollars backing other Democrats to defeat MAGA Republicans in other states. They also said there's no evidence to support a claim that AIPAC is among their donors and that they disclose their donors every reporting cycle and follow the letter of the law. So again, not outright denying that AIPAC is involved, just there's no evidence there yet.
So the Portland Mercury did some strong follow-up reporting on the race midweek, but Maxine Dexter continued to profess ignorance, even in the face of that reporting. But then undeniable pieces of evidence began to emerge. While the super PACs aren't required to disclose their donors until the day before the election, the candidate herself has to disclose regularly down the campaign stretch. So she had to produce what's called a 48-hour report after a May 7th fundraiser. Now, at that fundraiser, of the nearly 80 donors who gave that day, nearly 90% are also donors to AIPAC. In other words, it was an AIPAC fundraiser, which you can find out just by searching the names of those donors on the site there. The next day, Dexter disclosed having raised nearly $600,000 in the month of April after raising just about $300,000 during her entire campaign before that. Doubling or tripling your fundraising in the last few weeks of the race is not typical. That is not normal.
All right, so that's about enough. That's from Counterpoints. Again, it's a leftist organization, but we'll get into where this goes from here. But yeah, this is basically what they're doing. They've realized that they've become a toxic brand, so they're laundering their money through other forms of political contributions to hide their participation. So be on the lookout for that, and be aware that that represents a major victory in the information war. That the fact that they have to hide their contributions now, first of all, is probably opening them up to some, you know, legal repercussions, I would have to guess. You can't really play fast and loose with contributions, campaign contributions like that. Otherwise, Letitia James will send you to jail for 400 years or whatever. So, I mean, I would be concerned at that. But it represents that, you know, the American people are just sick of the foreign influence, and they're sick of the moneyed influence. And while I would say this is an opportunity for us to come together, the unfortunate reality is the left is genuinely insane. So just like we've been saying for months at this point, and I mean, really, you know, ever since the truth about Israel really became apparent to people from the, you know, their actions over the last 2 years at this point, it was always like, okay, well, you know, we might disagree on some stuff, but like we both want America to have freedom of, you know, independence from this foreign government. We both want these moneyed interests out of our politics. So, you know, our representatives can focus on who they're supposed to represent, the American people. Maybe we could come together here. And then you look over there and they're just like, we're going to kill all white men. And you're like, okay, well, never mind then. Well, never mind then. I forgot. You want to cut my son's junk off and put him in a dress, and you're completely genocidal yourselves. So I guess we're not going to come together on that. Gee, sure would be nice. Sure would be nice to be able to come together on something for once, but your hearts are black as coal and full of hate. So that's not going to happen anytime soon. And we'll get into that in just a second. But sticking on the AIPAC topic, this is a very pertinent clip from the Lobby documentary that I've talked about forever. And I've actually referenced this clip very many times. And I think it's a very good example of how not just AIPAC, but any organization can portray themselves as speaking for millions and millions and millions of people. They literally get people in a room with like 12 millionaires and they go, this is the Jewish community. Listen to them. It's like, who the hell do they represent? They represent the millions of Jews in New York City or wherever they are? No, they just appoint themselves as the spokespeople and say, we speak for all of them. Don't worry about it. Yeah, that's the way this works. And they might not have barcodes, you know, scanning on their name tag, but they probably do. But I trust Matt Gaetz on that over AIPAC themselves. But here's the video that I keep accidentally playing that's actually from this documentary called The Lobby that I encourage you to go and watch. Let's watch.
Our undercover reporter wanted to learn more about how funding is secured for congressmen.
Speaking of the devil,
David Oakes, a prominent pro-Israel advocate, invited Tony to a fundraising event. Oakes later called him to discuss the details.
Is it just a social event?
No.
that this group supports. This is the Anti Political Group, definitely the wealthiest in D.C. or Mark Kirk, senator from Illinois, Ted Deutsch from Florida, Barbara Comstock, she's the congressman from Virginia, Richard Byrd from Carolina, Kelly Ayotte, she's fantastic, she's in the Arms Committee. They'll walk in the room and they'll say, everything here's on the record. And then they'll say, here's a little bit about me, and then people will ask very specific questions.
The fundraiser was being held in a wealthy suburb of Washington.
A big effort. It makes a difference. It really, really does. It's the best bang for your buck, and the networking is phenomenal. Congressmen and senators don't do anything unless you pressure them. They kick the can down the road unless you pressure them, and the only way to do that is with money.
Right now, our current contribution limit from any person to a candidate is $2,700. Now, that's a lot of money, you know, and that can certainly buy us some gratitude with the lawmaker. But if you really want to add punch to that type of buying of favors, what you do is you get 50 or 100 people together at an event like this, all chipping in $2,700, and then you bundle it all together and hand over the total amount to the lawmaker. At that point, we're talking anywhere up to $250,000. So suddenly you've got a group of people with the same demand they want from the lawmaker handing over $250,000. That buys a lawmaker.
The fundraiser was for Anthony Brown, who ran for Congress in November 2016.
This is direct spending. Brown's going to use that search brand to do ad campaigns. So they strategically pick the ones who are in the close reach that they want to build relationships with. So we want the Jewish community to go face-to-face in a small environment, 50, 30, 40 people, and say this is what's important to us. We want them to make sure that we give you money to enforce the Iranio. That way, when they need something from him or her, like the Iranio, they can quickly mobilize and say, look, we'll give you 30 grand. They actually impact.
He's actually saying we're buying this, these office holders. And that's the point. We're chipping in all this money so we can hand over $100,000 or $200,000 to the office holders so we can buy them.
You're not supposed to advertise.
All right, so this goes on again. This documentary, it's a documentary series from Al Jazeera called The Lobby. There's The Lobby UK and The Lobby US. They go undercover and they show how much AIPAC, and not just AIPAC, but the Israeli government working through AIPAC and the ADL, how panicked they were about the BDS movement, the way they manipulated the media and, you know, planted people in schools to stop the rise of the BDS movement. But there you saw not only are they portraying themselves as being representatives of a, you know, massive and diverse group of people, Jewish people in America. You cannot boil the views of all Jewish people in America down to 12 millionaires in a room in upstate New York or wherever that was, outside Washington, D.C. So they portray themselves as representing this massive group, even though it's just them. They bundle their money so they can contribute hundreds of thousands of dollars at one time rather than, you know, individually, a few bucks here or there. But importantly, it's all about that one topic, right? It's, yeah, you're going to come in, you're going to give a little speech, we're going to ask you questions, but at the end of the day, there's really only one thing they want from them. There's one topic that they are trying to achieve, and that is the Iran deal. They didn't want the Iran deal. They wanted the Iran deal to go away. And so if you have all these different congressmen, all these different candidates with all these different views, and every single one of them says to themselves, well, you know, I got 100 things I want to do. I might not totally agree on this one thing, but hey, what's one thing, right? I give up on this one thing. I comport myself with them on this one thing. I get the 99 things that I want, right? I can focus on the 99 things I want as long as I just go with them on this one thing. It's a minor sacrifice to get all this other stuff. But what you end up with is all these different congressmen from all these different parties and all these different viewpoints, but they all align on this one thing. And this one thing, ubiquitous throughout them, they all agree on this one thing. So that's the thing that happens. This is how you control government. So extremely interesting stuff. And again, I think all of this is part of the same movement, the same awakening, the same awareness being established in the minds of people, but also the courage to speak up about this and realize, okay, they might call me names, but those names don't really do much anymore. And this is the truth. And even if they try to attack me, it's really only going to make them look bad. Like the information landscape is shifting under our feet, and we have to appreciate that. And it's, again, it's not just about Israel, and it's not just about Jews. Like, that's one aspect of it. And I think it's a major aspect of it because it's been such a censored and, you know, tamped down topic for so long. It obviously is going to be the most apparent when that reverses. But that's not the only thing. Honestly, I see the, you know, I watched a good portion of the interview between Dave Smith and Nick Fuentes yesterday. I think the mainstreaming of Nick Fuentes is a kind of watershed moment. They really tried to keep that guy out of political discussion and they couldn't keep him out. So now he's going on more mainstream stuff. I think he's sort of tempering his message a little bit, but I think that's advisable. If he wants to actually have a political career, he can drop some of the more edgy stuff. You know, it's probably a good thing to do. And I think he's maturing and realizing that, or, you know, at least playing the game a little bit more so he can be friends with these people and actually get his message out and actually have conversation. I mean, it's very different. It's very different today than it was even a year ago. Okay. You've got Steven Crowder. And remember, you know, Charlie was kind of on the forefront of this too. You look back at videos from Charlie Kirk 5 years ago, and when people ask him about, you know, why shouldn't we stand up for white people? He goes, that's evil. That's wrong. We shouldn't do that. That's a distraction. He would like talk down to people. But over the Groyper Wars and over just like time over time, eventually he got to the point where the more recent videos, he's going, no, white people, this is a white country and white people are great and we deserve not to be hated. What's wrong with that? That's a change in discussion that is long overdue. This should be the way things are discussed. There's nothing, and I always point out, I mean, it's like some sort of weird inverted white supremacy where white people go, it's fine. You can be mean to us. We're white. We'll be fine, right? And it's like, no, you're just a group of people like every other group of people. You don't deserve to be exclusively singled out and attacked and disparaged and discriminated against. Why would you allow that? Unless you think you're so special, it doesn't even matter. You're not that special. You should treat yourself like everybody else treats themselves, as unique and special and important with our own heritage and history that's worth protecting and preserving, not something to be ashamed of. Every other race feels that way. Why not white people? And this has been my message since I was in kindergarten, basically, because this was obvious since then. Steven Crowder, clip 16 here, went to a black barbershop, and what he's saying here is perfectly reasonable, but not something I would have expected from him or anybody else, even on that mainstream. He's on the mainstream fringe. And here's him making a very powerful argument for white people. Let's watch.
You have young white people who are getting more and more mad. I'm just telling you the truth.
What, they mad?
And they have the guns. They're mad because this
why
thing.
Are they mad at
here's
me?
Why. Here's why. They go, look, I'm 12 times more likely to be killed by a black person than you are a white person. And you go, well, that doesn't count. They go, look, my dad's business got burned down.
Yeah, where?
My city got burned down. I've been accused of being a racist, even though I'm not. And I'm looking at this right now, and I'm not allowed to have an opinion. And I can't go into certain neighborhoods because I get my ass kicked. And then you just say, yeah, but you've had systemic power. That is a surefire way to breed racism.
Surefire way to breed racism. He's exactly right. And again, it's not even that a group of people or like us or anybody's like pulling the conversation to where we want it to be and they're following our talking points. It's just all of the artificial restrictions, all of the limitations to the Overton window are just being shattered. They're just being knocked over and ignored and blown through. And people are realizing we don't have to comport ourselves to this. We don't have to be scared to say what we think. We don't have to feel browbeaten and guilty over stuff we didn't do. And, you know, I see people like Steven Crowder saying things I never would have expected him to say. And I see black people, Hispanic people, Asian people all going, you know, this is wrong, actually. Actually, you know, why would you treat white people like that? Why wouldn't you treat them the way you want to be treated? Isn't that what makes everybody happy? Don't you want to treat white people the same way you want white people to treat you? I mean, is this not an obvious conclusion to come to? So, again, it's not that the world is being dragged towards an anti-Semitic or racist, you know, point of view. It's that all of these artificial limitations to our awareness, to our scope of understanding are being eliminated, are being abolished, are being overcome through the courage and forthright truthfulness of people like InfoWars, Nick Fuentes, Steven Crowder, Charlie Kirk. Maybe it's a coincidence that this all happened in the month after Charlie Kirk's murder, but it's been a turning point. We are witnessing the turning point. And it's not a controlled one. It's not an artificial one. It's an honest turning point from humanity.
You're not going to talk to me and talk over me because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, these will be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, but I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing, but it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon, and that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com itself. So again, thank you all for your support, and there's more.
But wait, there's more!
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Bigotry will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Got the National Guard cleaning up violent cities, but how do we get the press off our back?
Don't worry, they won't even notice us. We've developed a perfect new camouflage.
Fascism!
Help that poor man!
This is inhumane!
It's socioeconomic.
There's nothing we can do to change it.
Just part of living in a big city.
Absolutely
fantastic. That, of course, is from Freedom Tunes, and my guest, Seamus Coughlin, is the mind behind Freedom Tunes. We're thrilled to introduce Seamus Coughlin, the creative mastermind behind Freedom Tunes, a YouTube channel with over 1 million subscribers and 294 million views, known for its razor-sharp animated political satire. Seamus is a self-taught animator, comedy writer, and impressionist, and he's just launched a fundraising effort for a new full-fledged, full-scale show called Twisted Plots, I think is the name of it. You can go to twistedplots.com to help contribute to that. You can follow him at Seamus underscore Coughlin and at Freedom underscore Tunes. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm very flattered by that introduction. I really appreciate that. I have an amazing team. I've got a crew of probably the hardest working animators in the entire industry. I started doing this 11 years ago, actually. I was 19 when I launched the channel. And over the years, I've just accumulated more people to help as we've grown so we could continue to churn content out and continue to keep our production value up. And I've got to say, God has really blessed me with some of the most talented people on the planet helping me with these. So I can't take all the credit, but I'm very flattered, and I'm really glad you enjoy the cartoons.
I do. I got to say, it's almost surreal hearing your voice talk to me. I've heard your voice so much, and it's so distinct. It's like... And I'm honestly surprised we haven't had you on before. We've shown a lot of your cartoons over the years. I've been following you, it feels like, for the last 11 years. And they're great stuff. It's all fantastic. So, tell us about the new show and where you're going next and what your plans are.
So one of the things that's always been really important to us with Freedom Tunes, even though we're commenting on the news cycle generally, and we are talking about politics explicitly, is for the comedy to come first. If we can't figure out something funny to say about it, we don't say anything at all, basically. There are exceptions here and there when we want to do a heartfelt video, like a memorial for someone who's passed away, but that's pretty rare. For the most part, we're just doing comedy. We're just doing satire. And after 11 years... I feel that it's time for us to step out into making longer form content. I've thought and prayed about this for a long time. I've seen a number of other conservative organizations try to do this, and I commend their efforts, but I think that there's room to improve. And I know that with my team and myself and the track record we have of producing razor sharp content over the past 11 years, that we can make something really, really funny. So what I actually did is I spent the last several months after the election being a little bit reclusive. I wasn't doing podcasts as often, and it's because I was building out a bunch of really cool projects in the background to build out culture, and I would say this is the crown jewel of them. We finished the pilot episode. It's 25 minutes long, and anyone who goes to twistedplots.com and donates at the $25 level will get to see that episode. What we're really trying to do is express our values, not through preaching or heavy-handed moralizing, but just through funny stories, because story is the way people have communicated morality throughout all of history. I mean, Christ, the ultimate teacher, taught with parables very often. I think people believe that what a conservative audience wants is a show where the right-winger self-insert character is going around owning the SJWs or whatever, but the reality is what people want are good stories. They want stories that promote their values made by people who don't just not have contempt for them, who actually respect them and their way of life and are fighting for the same cause. So if you guys believe in that, if that resonates with you and you want to help us produce this, please go over to twistedplots.com. The reality is animation is so expensive because so many people need to work on it for so long that usually only really large studios and large corporations are able to do it. We've been able to budget really cleverly and effectively to stay alive on YouTube, but it has been difficult and it's taken a lot of strategizing. And so in order to make the show, to put this into perspective, season one of South Park, if you've ever seen those episodes and you see how crude and simple they are, those episodes cost $250,000 each back in 1997. So adjusted for inflation, one of those episodes cost like $500,000 to make. And people go, how is that possible? And it's because you need a big crew of people working for a long time. We, with really clever budgeting in the year 2025, many years removed from when South Park was doing this, we're going to be able to make our entire season for the inflation adjusted cost of one episode of their show in 97. So we're really stretching your dollar. And the reason we're able to do that is because we have an awesome, dedicated team who believes in the message. So we believe each episode is going to take about 3 months to finish. We've already got the pilot done. 3 months, potentially 6 months on the long end, but we're shooting for 3 months, and I believe that that's going to be possible. And so if you guys believe in that, you want to support the mission, you want good stories, and you also want to see us be able to move out into film, television, all these other things to create conservative content that will move the goalpost, that will actually push the Overton window, that'll change the culture, please go over there and support us. Well, TwistedPlots.com.
So twistedplots.com, and I want to get into what the plot of the new show is about. And for some reason, when you're talking about your team, I'm picturing you with like five different computers all running ChatGPT. I think I know what you're. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't expect AI to come up with anything like this. But you're exactly right. And this has been my frustration with the attempts of conservative media. We don't have to call any names out, but it's like. It's got to be entertaining. It's got to be good first. And, you know, my thing was always look at how successful the left is. They aren't making preachy movies, right? If they want to make a movie right. that encourages people to, like, support abortion, it's not a movie about abortion. It's a movie about a summer camp, and abortion is a plot point in there where you side with the woman, you know, emotionally. So that's what the focus needs to be. It needs to be entertaining and funny and captivating first. And you can have the messages sort of slip in there. Of course, they do it in devious and underhanded ways. I just think it, you know, obviously the content comes first. Content is king, and the message can't get in the way of that. But it seems like it always does when the right wing gets involved in this. And it's just sort of, it just sort of ends up being cringe and not nearly as funny. But, you know, my only problem I've ever had with Freedom Tunes is they're too short. They're always short. And of course, it's because of all the effort that goes into it. But I feel like every time I've seen one of the Freedom Tunes cartoons, I'm like, dang it, it's over already. I guess I got to watch it again and then go watch some of the other ones. What's the plot of the show? Yeah. Like, what's it going to be centered around, if anything?
So actually, the plot of it sort of connects to what you were just talking about. It's an anthology series. So every single episode is a completely new, unique story where we're exploring usually either a different facet of modern life, a different moral conundrum, potentially even a science fiction concept about technologies that we think are going to arrive soon, or technologies that are far off but allow us to explore and get to the root of an important moral issue in society today. And so I think what's happened is, you're right, they've spread these negative messages through story. I mean, what do you think is going to be more effective at changing culture? Like trying to do a documentary on why adultery or fornication are good, or making Titanic, like right. the highest grossing blockbuster film of all time, where a woman is cheating on her fiance to fornicate with a stranger, and it's portrayed as this beautiful, gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching story. And by the way, all right, I say this as someone, if you lay the plot of that film out on paper, you look at it in the black and white, she's a bad person. Right. She's a villain. They trick you into thinking she has a character arc, because she goes from one kind of selfish person to a different kind of selfish person by the end of the story. But she's still selfish. But listen, I'm mad enough to acknowledge when you're watching that film, it draws you in. The music is done perfectly. The cinematography is fantastic. The special effects are phenomenal. Give the devil his due. James Cameron is a phenomenal storyteller. He's a master of his craft. And unfortunately, the people who have been masters of this craft, who have rose to prominence over the past several decades, have been people who put degeneracy and bad morals in their films. And again, it's not by giving you stats. It's not by giving you talking points. It's by giving you a story. And so what I'm trying to do here is tell stories that are entertaining, that are funny, and that are sharp, but that give you a good moral.
Absolutely. Again, couldn't agree more. It's interesting that you choose Titanic, because that came out when I was probably, what is it, 97 or something? So I was 7 years old. Yeah. And like, I remember that was like a lot of my friends' first introduction to the concept of sex, or seeing sex, you know, displayed on. And like, it made some of my friends kind of perverted. Like they, you know, they were like really into it. Like it very much sunk into people's subconscious. So it's interesting that you choose that story, that movie in particular. I feel like scientists could study the effect that movie had on morals of children. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it was one of the highest grossing blockbusters of all time. And again, for everything that I'm saying about it, I do think it's morally degenerate, but also like genuinely, I am appreciating James Cameron's talent. He did a phenomenal job packaging all of that up. And I, by the way, I don't think that James Cameron went out and said like, I'm going to make a movie so that people think adultery is good. I think James Cameron just told the story that was in his heart, and that those are his morals. And what we need is people on our side of the aisle telling stories that come from our hearts, and people who have given their hearts to Christ, who have given their lives to Christ, making these kinds of stories. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make stories that are organic, but my morals will flow out through them. And so if you agree with the things I'm saying here, you agree with the mission, please support us. I don't want to harp on Titanic for too long.
Let's do it. Let's harp.
But here's part of why it's brilliant, because there is a goodness that people are seeking. Like, romance is a good and beautiful thing created by God. And God's plan for the sexes is marriage and motherhood and fatherhood. And so what the left will often do, and what these storytellers will do who have risen to prominence, is they will find something like good, and then they'll either show you the wrong way of getting it, or they'll pervert it in some way. And that's because, listen, the devil can't create anything new. Like, sex is a good thing. It's a beautiful thing, but adultery is not. Fornication is not. It's not something you're supposed to do outside of marriage. It's part of God's plan for a married couple. And romance is beautiful. And also, a man dying for a woman is a beautiful thing. We know that's in our nature. So what they'll often do is they'll take these tropes that they know people will buy into, and then they'll throw a couple bad things in there. I know I'm talking about this film a lot. I mean, there's a million other examples. I was speaking with Poso about this on the show the other day, but George Lucas in Star Wars, he said that he based the Rebels on the Viet Cong.
Right.
I mean, this stuff goes so deep. Films that you think are innocent, films that you don't think have bad morals in them, absolutely do. You look at like the Disney Renaissance. I have friends who worked for Disney, who were Disney animators. We even have people who have worked for us who have worked for Disney and with Disney in the past. Again, I can appreciate those films on their artistic merit, but you look at something like The Little Mermaid, for example, and people say, well, you know, she disobeys her father, sure, but what a little girl learns from that film is by disobeying your father, things will go wrong. And it's like, do they, or do they learn that if you disobey your father, you'll have an adventure and everything will turn out right?
Right.
I think it's the latter. I think that's part of why we got to be careful about the stories that we're telling. We got to be careful about the stories that we support.
Well, 100%. It's funny. I went on like this exact same rant last week when we were talking about, you know, Netflix and the creepy kid stuff from there. I mean, it's really bad. And, you know, I was pointing out, you know, if you watch the Disney Channel, they'll have a show where for 25 minutes, the bratty character is the cool guy. And in the last 5 minutes, he gets his comeuppance and he gets a pie in the face. But what sinks in is what the kids are seeing for that 25 minutes. Oh, the cool kid is bratty and annoying and brash. And that's how I should be if I want to be cool. And I think a lot of that's deliberate. A lot of it's just, you know, seeps in, you know, sort of by accident. And of course, as you point out, like, once you know the propaganda, it's not effective, right? Once you're aware of what they're trying to do or what the underlying purpose of what they're doing is or what effect it may have, you can sort of pack that away and go, okay, I'm not going to fall for that. I'm going to appreciate the art for what it is. But once you can identify the subconscious, you know, impulse, it's significantly less effective, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And again, you're not immune to the effects at that point. You still have to be very careful about, you know, the things you're reading and consuming, but it certainly helps to take a critical eye to things. I think it's extremely unfortunate that we live in a place and time in history where we have the best infrastructure for telling compelling stories that has ever existed. You can show people movies with videos and audio. It's insane. We have talking pictures. It's incredible. We're used to it, so we don't realize how unbelievable it is. And what's so sad about that is the people who are in control of the infrastructure that has provided us with that entertainment have been people who have contempt for our way of life, right, have been people who want to push our culture in a bad direction. But here's the good news. It's decentralizing now.
Yep.
And as I mentioned in the past, you needed a giant studio to fund animated content. Nowadays, we were able to make a Give, Send, Go, and we're able to have our audience members fund it. We're able to have our audience members put their money towards the show. So some big executive isn't saying, I do like this message, I don't like this message, I'm not a fan of this, or I am a fan of this. And we're able to make something our audience wants. And I just want to say we're off to a fantastic start. We, after two and a half days, we already have over a third of our budget raised, which is absolutely incredible. That's such a gift from God. The message that that sends is that regular people want this kind of grassroots content, and they're sick of the stories that Hollywood is telling. And they're even sick of some of the stories that people rivaling Hollywood are trying to tell. They want something organic and grassroots from people whose content they've seen in the past.
Well, 100%. And you know, honestly, you've shown that you're capable of it. Like, I remember, I think when I first saw your stuff, it was like, oh, this is good. And I almost thought like, okay, either this is going to be so much work, there's no way this guy's going to keep this up all the time, or this is so easy, I'm going to see a million of these. But it's like, you know, I was like, oh, this must be, you know, I'm going to see lots of people try to copy this style. But like, you've really maintained your style. You've really just gotten like progressively better and better. I really am a big fan. I've watched you forever. And like, it's pretty rare that, you know, you see something on the internet and you're like, okay, I have to watch this. Like, there are certain creators or there are certain, you know, properties that it's like, I know I'm going to like what I see on Freedom Tunes. Has there been anything? Cause the other thing that it gives you the freedom to do is try things that might not work, to give it
that's
a try.
Right.
Cause that I think is one of the worst things about Hollywood or the studio system, is there's this entropy. There's this unwillingness to try anything new. And then when something new works, everything goes to that. And they, you know, milk that until it's completely dead and exhausted. Marvel movies, that type of thing. But with you, I imagine you have an ability to sort of go, I'm going to just see if this works. I'm going to see if this style of humor works. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Is there anything like that that you sort of tried out and gone, well, this didn't go so well? Or was there something that you tried and went, wow, that went a lot better than I thought? Are you able to explore like that?
Oh, absolutely. So the cutthroat nature of the YouTube algorithm is a little bit of a double-edged sword, because it forces you to upload things all the time, which is the difficult part, but it forces you to upload things all the time, which is the beneficial part. So you have to churn things out on a weekly basis, at least, often more than once a week, if you really want to stay relevant with the algorithm and you want to stay in your subscribers' feeds. But and that can be frustrating, and that can lead to burnout, and that can cause problems. But at the same time, you try things you would never try. There's a lot of videos I've made that I never would have made if YouTube didn't put that pressure on us to continue to churn content out. Now, the good news is we have no plans of stopping Freedom Tunes. We're still going to do Freedom Tunes while we're doing this show. But the good news is Freedom Tunes is going to kind of be able to satisfy that need to churn out content, commenting on current events. And what Twisted Plots is going to be able to do is act as a vehicle for telling longer lasting stories that we have more time to be perfectionist about. Because even though the time frame we're working with is still pretty tight for a 22 minute long show, it will still give us time to put extra thought into things. It's not like 4 days and then the video's out and we can't do anything with it anymore. And that was one of the most rewarding and fun parts of working on the pilot that we finished, was I had the opportunity to like go back and add more jokes or modify things or tweak things. And my animation team has also had the ability to do so. You mentioned our style improving over the years. I want to thank you for saying that. And I wish I could take all the credit for that. But again, I've got a great team, and I have a rule that I don't hire someone unless they're better than me at something. And so everyone on the team has contributed their own unique flair in a specific way that has taken the visual quality of our show to a much higher level than it could have been at if I was doing it by myself. And now that we're producing this series, all of the test animation we've done for the episodes we're going to produce moving forward looks really good. I'm talking television level quality.
I believe it. And I'm very excited for it. I'm kind of jealous of you. You know, I used to make short films. Like, before I worked at InfoWars, I was doing a lot of like creative stuff and skits and that sort of thing.
Oh, nice.
And I always was a perfectionist, and I would not release something if it wasn't perfect, and I would spend forever thinking about stuff. And it was something I had to learn coming to InfoWars, where I'd go up to Alex and I'd go, you know, I'm thinking about doing it. And he would just go, just do it. He'd walk away, and I'm like, right, I just need
right,
to do it.
Right.
You got to just do it sometimes.
I had a mentor who was kind of like that. And when I was younger, if I started a new project without finishing the old one, he would like yell at me, be like, finish things, Seamus, finish things, finish something. And that's a struggle for an artistic personality.
I heard
really good advice, probably about 10 years ago. Somebody said, finished is better than perfect.
Right.
That's definitely true. And look, when you're working on the kind of deadline that we've been working with, when you're churning out a video a week and you've been doing that consistently for years, It gets tiring at certain points, but it's like, I've got the greatest job ever, man. I get to make cartoons. That's a huge blessing. And also, I've got this amazing audience. I've got such an incredible audience. And I've always been very grateful for them. And it's always been apparent to me the way that my audience has changed my life because I'm able to do this for a living. But once we launched this crowdfunding campaign and people started donating, they would put little notes on there like, I watched this with my son, or I watched this with my dad, or my family enjoys this, or you changed my perspective in this way. And it's just been so beautiful and humbling to see the way that these little cartoons that we've been making, these humble little cartoons, have been able to become a part of people's lives. It's really edifying and encouraging, and I've never been more energized in my life, even though I'm exhausted because I've been like going 24/7 for the crowdfunding campaign and getting the pilot done and all this. Like, I have never been more energized and more excited in my life.
Oh, that's incredible. And of course, you know, humor is the spoonful of sugar that helps medicine go down. You really can get through to people with humor in ways that you can't get through to people in other ways. I found that, you know, I did a little skit about the vaccine and I showed it to my brother-in-law who had gotten the vaccine because of his job. And even in the parts where it's jokes about that, he's sort of laughing along. And at the end of it, he's like, whew. That one kind of hurt, dude. But it, you know, but it wasn't browbeating. It wasn't browbeating him. It was like, okay, yes. you can laugh at it and still see the truth through it. It's such a valuable tool.
I saw that video. I saw that video that you did. And yeah, that's really important because people don't realize this. All right. Our ideologue is going to get really upset if you're poking the bear or making fun of them. Sure. And are regular people going to get upset if you're just throwing talking points at them disguised as comedy? Absolutely. But if you're making really good jokes about this stuff and they're actually funny, even the people you're making fun of are usually going to have a decent sense of humor about it, right? Most people are going to be cool about it. Most people are going to be cool. Again, the rabid ideologues, the crazy people, not so much. But it's also an effective way to help change people's opinions because, like you said, comedy is that spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down.
Well, and people, you know, what are the ideologues even going to say? You know, even if the ideologues get pissed, what, they're arguing with your joke? Like it's
yes,
you know,
exactly.
Right? How dare
exactly.
you say that? That one isn't funny.
Yeah, exactly, bro. Like, you're going to debunk my cartoon? Are you about to like fact check my drawing?
It's great. It really is the perfect vehicle. And plus, I mean, my God, the stuff to make fun of these days. I mean, Joe Biden to, I mean, it's, in a certain view, it's hilarious. In another view, it's terrifying and horrifying and, you know, disheartening, but it's always very funny. And I want to ask you about that and sort of how you pick your topics and if there's anything that's sort of too far, anything that you have trouble making funny. I want to get into that, but I do notice that you're sitting you're at the Timcast studio. You're a busy man these days. Well, what do you do? You were doing something before this. You're doing something after this. Where can people find you these days?
Sure. I mean, again, the best place, twistedplots.com, if you want to help contribute. But we've got our YouTube channel. It's Freedom Tunes. If you want to go over to Freedom Tunes on YouTube, we've also got an X account. So any of those places are fine. If you're interested in seeing some of the short cartoons that we upload on a weekly basis, please go over to Freedom Tunes and subscribe. We've actually got a video coming out tomorrow about a certain streamer. And
I was
going to
ask you about that.
And his relationship with animals, maybe. And yeah, if you guys want to go over again, I got to plug one more time, twistedplots.com. I would just really appreciate it. I think you guys will really enjoy it. And yeah, it's been an incredible journey. We've been insanely busy. I could not have done this without my team. I have the most incredible team. And also, I couldn't have done this without the support of my wife and without her prayers and without the prayers of religious, and one nun particularly.
Well, you're with us for a little while, right? You're coming back on the other side of this break.
Yeah,
okay,
all
right.
I know that we're going to a break soon, but I'm here for a bit, yeah.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Okay, more with Seamus on the other side. Freedom_tunes on X. Seamus_Coughlin on X. TwistedPlots.com. Go contribute today for the future of comedy. We'll be right back.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I saw this a few weeks ago. We got it done. That young girl that is the return of the British queen that fought the Romans, Boudica. Look at this. The West awakens. Look at this badass shirt, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a red InfoWars over the heart on the left, and then it's got her on the back. I designed this shirt. I think it's amazing. The West Awakens 2025. This is a badass shirt, and it literally funds people totally committed to freedom. Then we've got Virtue Signal, and it's the Cracker Barrel symbol right there that we updated there. So we got that. We've also got another, the West Awakens with the hatchet and the butcher knife, ladies and gentlemen. Get them now at theyellowstonestore.com. But what you really want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it massively discounted, 25% off across the store, apparel, all of it. We've got buy one bottle already discounted, the Shilajit or the Atomic Defense Immune Boost, and get another bottle half off. The point is, we got War Bonds. That's a nice little piece of art you get with my face on it. You get $110 for $100. It's mailed to you as a promo code on it for the site. But everybody that becomes a VIP, $30 a month, just like being Amazon Prime, you get $40 to spend each month right when you pay that. You cancel any time. Get a special deal, special offer, special sales. I need your support. Wars aren't cheap. So what do good salesmen do? They sell good products. You are insane if you don't get our methylene blue. You are crazy if you don't get our Ultimate Life Force Blood Detox. It's all there at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Take action now and get these new limited edition shirts like the F Around Find Out.
Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go to TheAlexJonesStore.com today. Take advantage of our anniversary sale celebrating InfoWars' founding all the way back in 1997 with all shirts being $19.97. Bunch of new designs. Get a veteran of the InfoWar t-shirt if you are, in fact, a veteran. Even a newly introduced veteran. You can buy one too. No time period necessary. Plus you're getting 50% off the sea moss gummies, which are one of our most popular and best-selling products. Go today to TheAlexJonesStore.com and keep alive this incredible outlet for freedom, justice in the American way. And of course, what one of the things we most pride ourselves on is presenting things in a way, because the news can be really dark, the news can be very depressing and very upsetting. But our message at InfoWars has always been, you gotta be aware of the threat and then you gotta face it head on and understand that humanity is more powerful than these forces. We can take them down if you're just aware of them and fighting back against them. And on that note, my guest, Seamus from Freedom Tunes at Seamus_Coughlin on X at Freedom_Tunes on X does a great job in slipping these messages into the subconscious of his viewers because they're just watching a funny video. How do you design your humor? Do you design your humor consciously? Because in the video that we played earlier, and we're going to play another one at the beginning of the next segment, it's something that you kind of can't be offended by, right? It's this funny idea of like they're outraged that Border Patrol is grabbing somebody, but when they see it's just a gang member stabbing somebody, they're like, whew, that's fine. It's on the nose, but it's not offensive. Do you thread that line consciously, or how do you approach things like that?
You know, I think I'm just a very mild-mannered, inoffensive person. I'm often told that. In all seriousness, the issues matter to me, and I do think about them a lot. And, you know, I used to do a lot of podcasting, too, and so I would pay much more attention to the news cycle. I still obviously have to pay a lot of attention to it to be able to make this stuff. And there's just certain trends that you'll notice. And when you're watching this stuff, I find that there's two different ways you can produce satire. One way of looking at it is it's the art of turning your anger into somebody else's laughter.
Right.
But on the other end, another way of looking at it, and I actually think this way is the more effective way, if I'm being totally honest, is if you just look at an issue and you try to figure out what's funny about it, because there's usually something, that'll sort of inform like A, where you are politically, and B, what the actual issue at hand is. And so you have these people who will tell you, if some guy stabs an old lady, he only did it for socioeconomic reasons because we didn't build that library in his neighborhood 30 years ago, and shame on us. But then, like, if a police officer shoots someone in self-defense, he just did that because he's racist.
Right.
So history started 5 seconds ago when it comes to some people and not for others. And yeah, I always find that to be an interesting juxtaposition, this sort of false compassion that the left has for criminals as opposed to the total callousness with which they regard the victims. And you just put those things together and there's the video. But the difficult thing is actually breaking down how you come up with that idea, because obviously when you explain a joke, you sort of kill it. And I think it's similar when it comes to opening up the process of how you came up with it. I don't exactly remember writing that one, because we're writing multiple videos a week. Like I write multiple videos a week to get these out usually. And so I just wrote that out at my keyboard, when I was very probably frustrated with what I was hearing in the news. I wish I could have a more interesting answer than that, but that was basically it.
Well, you know, there's so many contradictions like that. And it's really about, you know, highlighting the contradiction and just putting it out there for people to see. And I love it because you're right. I mean, it's almost things that you can't explain. Like I struggle hosting this show going, if you can't see this, how can I even explain it to you, right? If you can't see how obvious the false compassion is, or the, you know, the discrepancy between the way they feel about this and the way they feel, it's like, I guess I can try to explain this, but it's so much more impactful, I feel, just to put it in cartoon form and go, this is what you people believe. Do you get that? Do you understand that that's the case? And I do want to get into the false compassion thing too. Yes. I got it. You know, once you're going to stay with us for one more segment. Then afterwards, I'm going to talk about this Katie Porter woman. I'm not sure if you've seen these videos of this woman. She's so nice and happy. And then like a person walks in the background. She's like, get the F out of my screen. And it's like, there's just this thin veil of compassion and friendliness, but you just barely scratch it. Underneath is this seething hatred. Hassan is the same thing. I'm not sure if you're trying to avoid his name for some reason, but I'm going to say Hassan.
No, I was not. I just wanted it to be a surprise.
Well, I've ruined that surprise, and we're going to talk about that on the other side. Stay with us. 90-second break.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you showed up.
Is that the way to talk?
You showed up. You voted.
You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. But we're not going to shut up. That's why on top of the giant sale we've got going, Veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not going to shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to thealexshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and here, promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I am your host, Harrison Smith. Joining me today is Seamus Coughlin from Freedom Tunes. Follow him on X at Seamus_Coughlin, at Freedom_Tunes. And of course, go to TwistedPlots.com. That's TwistedPlots.com. That's the name of his new show. The pilot's already done. Who gives you service like that? Contribute. You can get access to the pilot. And of course, they're raising money for a full-fledged season of this. I think this could be hugely successful. I think you're approaching it the right way. And I'm so happy we can do whatever we can to help send our audience that way, because I really think this is what people are hungry for, they're crying out for, they're not getting from other conservative outlets. So just very happy to do what we can to help Freedom Tunes thrive and Twisted Plots become a household name eventually. And God, there's so many things to get into, even from just what we've talked about already. And I do have one more question about sort of how you come up with stuff, because, and this is a personal thing for me, if I'm going to make a skit, I got to be really into the idea. I got to write the script. I got to find people to help me. I got to set up the cameras. I got to get everything right. I find it's a lot easier that during my 3-hour show, I just describe the skit that I would make if I had time. And it's just, it takes 30 seconds and I'm done. How do you decide what to focus on? Half the time, I feel like I'm like, okay, this is a good idea. I start writing it. I get halfway through and I go, maybe it's not as good as I thought. And I abandon it. But do you have any advice for people like me who, how do you pick an idea and then go with it and believe in it all the way to the end?
Yeah. So when you have to make content on a weekly basis, you just start pulling the trigger on things. And The two things that'll kill you are a fast news cycle and a slow news cycle.
Right.
When there's like 30 different things and each of them could be huge. You don't know what to talk about. I mean, it's great in the sense that it gives you options to explore about what kind of video you want to do, but it can be really tough to narrow it down. And then you have in the back of your mind that there's an opportunity cost here and maybe a video about this would go viral. A video about that might be funnier. So it's always a little bit difficult. And then of course there are slow news weeks where you're like, dude, no one's talking about anything. Right. I have no idea what we're going to cover right now. So I would say it's one of those things where you just got to force yourself to do it. And if you're consistently writing stuff that's funny, I mean, you get better at it over time, right? And so the ideas will flow to you more effortlessly. And the thing is the bar for what excites you will get higher. Mm. The more you do anything, and the better you get at it, the harder it becomes to sort of feel that giddiness maybe that, right. that you get when you're early on and you start doing a good job, but it still comes. It still comes. And you're like, oh, this idea is going to be great. This is going to, every single video we do is a video that I go like, I'm happy with this. I'm proud of this. I'm glad we made this. And then every once in a while, something just clicks for you when you're talking about a certain issue or you go, oh my gosh, if we did this way, that would be the funniest thing ever. And those are the times when you're definitely the happiest as a creative, but if you're not putting in the work on the days when your heart's not totally in it, like you never get to those days.
Right. Absolutely. 100%. And again, I just want to plug you. Are you hosting, the Timcast after this?
Yes, actually I am. Yeah. I'm hosting Timcast IRL tonight. For whatever reason, he thought he would trust me with that responsibility. So we're, excited to do that. I'm very excited to do that. I've hosted Tim's show a couple of times when he's been out of town. So I do have some experience with it, but it's always a really exciting experience. It's still pretty new to me. I haven't done it that many times. So if you guys want to go over there or see how I do rate my performance, please stop on by at Timcast.
Be brutally honest with Seamus. He needs it. No.
No. He's very nice. The sugarcoat everything. Leave very nice comments.
You know, Tim's show is a big show. You can feel that it's a big show. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk with us because that's a big deal. And I might be tempted just to try to focus on that. So I really do appreciate it. And let's go back to one of the first things you said in this interview, which is that the power of narratives, the power of stories. You know, I did a speech one time that I called the narrative war. Cause I thought, you know, information war is right, but really. Yeah. This is a battle of narratives, and we know the bad guy's narratives. The bad guy narrative goes something like everybody was happy and free and fruitful until those evil white men showed up and did colonialism everywhere. And if we just get rid of that, they have a very clear narrative that they're pitching to people. And I feel like the right is sort of grasping for that. I don't know if we've really landed on a compelling narrative yet, but just talk a little bit about the power of narrative and how that moves people.
I am so happy to. I'm so very happy to because this actually touches on something which is really important to me. When we talk about the political struggle, we put things in this left-right paradigm. What it's important to remember is where that paradigm came from. It was the French Revolution.
Right.
The left, that term, came onto the world stage when revolutionaries were going out and raping nuns and murdering priests and slaughtering aristocrats and innocent people. And so the left has essentially always been opposed to Christendom. It's always been opposed to the Catholic Church. At the center of the bullseye, it has always been that.
Right.
And so the closer you get to that narrative, the closer you get to Catholicism, the closer you get towards pushing for a restoration of Christendom, the closer you get, or the more effective you'll be at fighting the left.
Right.
Because ultimately, what the right has become, unfortunately, it's forgotten its identity, and it's become a loose association of people who just don't agree with the left. And here's the thing. Listen, if you're opposing the left right now and the radical stuff we're doing, even if you don't agree with me on everything, right? You're not Catholic, or maybe you're not even Christian. Listen, anything that we can work on to push back against this evil, I'm happy to work with you on 100%. But I do think if there's one unifying narrative that we need, it has to be the Christian narrative. And there's a reason that Christianity, there's a reason that this is a story. It did literally happen. It did all literally happen in history. But when God gives us this information, one of the important ways he gives us the information is through story. It's through the story of Christ and his death and resurrection. it's not just a list of rules. Rules are important, but like if you know the story, the rules come a little bit more naturally. It's a little less confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I was struck, you know, you grow up with the Bible stories, you know them second nature because you've heard them so many times. But then, like, I found it for me, I hadn't read the Bible ever, and then I read it as a young adult, and it's like, oh, this is a story. This is a narrative. These are guys writing about what they went through. It's not just a collection of sort of, you know, VeggieTales cartoons. It's like, no, this is a real story with a narrative, and it's compelling. Have you ever seen the discussion that they wrote it out, but they also have acted it out between like C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien? Cause they talk about this, and J.R.R. Tolkien talks about the power of, he calls them fairy stories, but fantasy, showing that, you know, humans have this capability to see what's not there. And that alone proves that there must be something beyond the prison walls of reality. And it's one of the most, I think one of the most impactful things I've ever seen in my life. And it's all about how not just that God is a storyteller, so we're storytellers, but that the central story of humanity is the Christ story, and how every compelling, important, transcendent media that we experience is just a reflection of the Christ story. And, you know, you can point to things like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and anything that sort of becomes a cultural movement. Harry Potter, even, J.R.R. Tolkien, or the author of Harry Potter, whatever her name is, Rowling, J.K. Rowling. You know, she said before the series is over, well, if you know Christianity, you know how the story is going to end. So there's something metaphysical about this, right? There's something metaphysical about the Christ story that we see reflected in our own life. And it's about triumph and disaster and sort of the role they play. I'm sort of rambling here, but I think this is so important for people to understand.
I completely and totally agree with you. And I believe that Lord of the Rings is one of, if not the most effective works of Christian fiction ever made. And it never mentions Christianity once. It never mentions the Bible.
It never mentions God even. Yeah.
Exactly. But Christian values come through the story so clearly in the same way that like degenerate leftist values come through in the stuff that Hollywood makes. They're not necessarily sitting down and going, how do I convince everybody? They're just telling stories, and what's in their heart comes out. Tolkien was a devout Catholic man, and what was in his heart was clearly beautiful because it came out onto the page in such a gorgeous way. And those films, again, Peter Jackson turned those books, which everyone called unfilmable. And by the way, this is like maybe me needing to turn in my like geek card or whatever. I haven't fully read through the Lord of the Rings in paper. Please don't kick me off the show.
Because the movies are too good?
Well, no, I just haven't. I haven't gotten around to it. The first one, and then I've gotten a bit into the second one. But still, I mean, Tolkien was obviously a genius, and what he was writing was obviously beautiful. But there was a subtlety to the morality, and like he didn't say this character represents this thing. He would get mad at people who said that. He would get angry. He'd be like, "No, don't say that. Like, there's not allegory here." But his values still came out through in a very beautiful way.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked you that because that's what happens to me is I go to reread Lord of the Rings and I'm like, I just should watch the movie because they're so good. I mean, it's almost, they're almost so miraculous. Good. It's like,
I have to watch Lord of the Rings once a year. I feel like Lord of the Rings and like Band of Brothers are those two that I feel like I have to see that once a year.
Yeah. I'm excited to show it to my kids for the first, I mean, my wife walked down the aisle to the song Concerning Hobbits. So it's like, you know, yeah, I'm maybe a little bit too into Lord of the Rings, but there's a reason, right? And it was always interesting to me is I would have these friends that were far leftist, that were like radical socialists, but they loved Lord of the Rings. And I was always going, why do you like it? Like, do you realize this is against everything you believe, but you love it? There's a disconnect there. What's that about?
I know exactly why it is. It's for the same reason that someone who knows adultery is wrong can watch Titanic and go, that was a really well-made film. Because movies, they hypnotize you, right? They've done studies on this. Did you know you burn more calories watching paint dry than watching TV because you use more brain power when you watch paint dry? Because when you're watching paint dry, you're using your imagination. Film sort of, it imagines things for you and it requires less effort. And that's why if not consumed in moderation, it can be a bad thing and it can really damage your imagination. But a good film watched in an appropriate dosage can be absolutely formative. And so it's a beautiful and good thing that they're able to watch Lord of the Rings and say, I love that film, even if it doesn't reflect their values, because in some slight way, I think it changes them. Mm. I think a film like that is so good that it actually leaves you different than when it found you. I think it makes you a little bit different. I think that it changes just a tiny something about you. And I believe that that's what good stories do. This is why people identify so much with their favorite characters and their favorite shows. Forrest Gump, Shawshank Redemption, a lot of the big ones that people love, great films. They feel about them in a way that you don't feel about some other consumer product, because it's an experience that seems transformative, because stories do transform us. They make us think about the world in a different way.
Absolutely. They're almost aspirational, at least yes. Lord of the Rings for me. It's you almost can see what's possible, even if it's not entirely real. Plus, I mean, the artistry that went into that, it's unbelievable stuff. But again,
it's actually insane. I understand that Hollywood was not as bad then as it was now, but it was still pretty bad. And it is an actual miracle that those films are as good as they are and that they're as wholesome as they are.
Right.
It's shocking. Last time I rewatched them, I was like, every time I rewatch them, I think that I'm like, I can't believe that these are this good. I can't believe that these are this decent.
Well, you gotta watch the behind the scenes stuff too. I mean, the care that went into it, the expertise, the artistry that went into it, it comes through. If it had been made 5 years earlier or 5 years later, it would have been a different movie. I mean, we don't even have to speculate, because we've got Rings of Power from Amazon. We know what Lord of the Rings would have looked like if they'd waited 10 or 20 years to make it, and it would have been absolute dumpster. It would have been a dumpster fire. It would have been absolute trash. Go ahead.
That's why they remake, but this is the thing. This is why they remake all of the stories that people love. If a story has grabbed our culture in a way that the left thinks is toxic, what do? They reboot it. They remake it. And then the sequel is just them lecturing you. The fastest they ever did that was with the Joker movie. It was like 4 years before they did a reboot that humiliated the protagonist. And by the way, I'm not saying that like the first Joker movie necessarily had a solid moral, but what I am saying is they clearly thought it contributed to toxic masculinity or something. And so they like had to have him get abused horrifically in the second film. I didn't end up watching the second one, but I know that they rebooted it basically for that reason. And it's what they do with every franchise that's beloved by men, is they reboot it and then they try to destroy it, because it's important for you to know that they control the narrative. They want you to be aware of that. Like, oh, you think those stories from the past are safe? Absolutely not. We will ruin all of them. We will make all of them degenerate. We'll make all of them horrible.
And the spite makes it unwatchable. I mean, it comes through and makes it, I mean, even, you know, one example I always point to is the show The Boys, right? Because people start realizing, oh, MAGA people identify with this main character. And so they went out of their way to like try to humiliate right wingers in it. And, you know, one of the funniest things is they're like, oh, these crazy conspiracy theorists think that there's a kidnapping ring. And it's like the main character is literally in a kidnapping ring in the show. So it's like they're so angry and they're so hateful and they just want to get their message across that like it just becomes inconsistent and nonsensical. It just, everything falls apart because they're driven by this obvious spite they hold for their own audience. It destroys their own work at the end of the day. Something in that, isn't there?
And this is actually a really consistent problem. And a lot of directors and writers will say, you missed the point. So for example, when people watch Starship Troopers and they love it, or if they watch Watchmen and they identify with Rorschach, or they watch The Boys and they relate with Homelander, or, you know, even something like Rick and Morty and they identify with Rick, or Parks and Recreation and they identify with Ron Swanson. It's a really consistent problem for these writers that they create a character who you're supposed to not want to be like. And then the audience wants to be like them. And in some cases, by the way, I think some of those characters like are kind of cringe, and I don't think it's good that people want to be like them. But for other characters, it's like, okay, they're pretty cool. And you mentioned this thing about the character being really cool and awesome for the whole story and then getting their comeuppance at the end. They sort of try to do that, where they make the character really relatable and really engaging and really approachable and really funny and really competent and all of these things that an audience member wants to be. But then at the very end, it turns out they were wrong. The reason I find the Starship Troopers discourse so fascinating is because it perfectly explores the exact issue that I'm talking about here with these writers sort of missing the point. Everyone talks about media literacy and they say, well, you're not media literate because you're misunderstanding the point of the story. It's like, literacy is not just about reading, it's about writing. And if everyone's misunderstanding your story, maybe the failure of literacy is on your part. Even if you're fluent in the English language, there is some part of human nature that you are just totally illiterate in and can't communicate with if you believe that people are going to identify with brain-sucking bugs over attractive, young, brave actors cast as characters who are fighting the bugs. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And I mean, it is cliche at this point that the communists literally side with the bugs. Like, it's not even a joke. They literally side with the bugs. And that whole thing is
just... They side with demons, because they side with the demons.
Right. It's like, whatever's ugly, whatever's gross, whatever is like, it's weird, man. It's weird how they gravitate to that stuff. But of course, if you read the book Starship Troopers, it's not a satire, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, I read a little bit. I'm going to get bullied for this too. I didn't read the whole thing of that. I did read a little bit of that one too.
The beginning's the best part.
Yeah, it's supposed to be sincere. It's intended to be sincere.
Yeah. And it's fascinating that, all the way when he was writing it in the '50s or whatever, it's like, it sounds an awful lot like what America sounds like today. You know, the whole beginning is, you know, people couldn't go to the park because of these gangs of hoodlums would beat you up. And it's like, I know a thing or two about that. But again, there's this seething hatred that underlies the left. There's this inauthenticity that comes across. You know, we mentioned Hassan Piker. For people that don't know, he basically was caught shocking his dog, and his dog didn't even do anything. She just like stands up and he yells at her and hits a button, and it looks like a shock collar goes off. And it's just like, this dude, and I saw a great comment on this where they said, you know, they want you to think that they're only cruel to people above them, that they're mean and they're brash, but it's because they're punching up. But then you see this guy abuse his dog. It's like, no, they're just mean. They're just bad people. And it's just whoever they have power over, they're going to attack and try to destroy. There's something like that's bubbling up from them, I think.
What you have to remember is whenever someone is talking about equality, what they're saying is no one should occupy a higher position than me.
Right.
They're not saying I care about the people beneath me. They're saying I don't want for there to be anybody above me. And so with what Hassan Piker is doing, I mean, hurting this little animal, it's obviously horrifying, but that's the playbook, man. These people go on and on all day about how empathetic they are. Firstly, empathy is a neologism. Compassion is actually what we should be talking about. Right. Empathy literally just means like in feelings. It can mean anything. Compassion means to suffer with. Mm. That's a substantive word. That actually means something. Empathy doesn't actually really mean anything. But how many people who are like compassionate, or if you prefer the term empathy, empathetic, who need to tell you all day long how empathetic? I've never met anybody who was like a good person who spent a lot of time talking about what a good person they were or what an empathetic person they were. But listen, when it boils down to, and this is not like specifically aimed at Hassan, this is just true of the left in general. Dude, they hate God. Their entire ideology is anti-logos. They hate the bodies that they were born into. They even hate the body that you were born into. They want to destroy you and your life. These are not people who have a well-balanced mind. These are not people whose souls are, functioning in harmony with their calling in life. These are people who don't live virtuously. And this is not me talking as like, I, Seamus Coughlin, paragon of virtue, best man who ever lived. I fail many, many, many times. I'm not trying to pretend it's anything other than that. But when you fail, it's like, it's important to repent. It's important to pick yourself back up. And when you can't do that, listen, we're human. We're all sinners. We're all going to fail. You either repent and try to do better, or you find a way to rationalize your wrongdoing. And the more you rationalize your wrongdoing, the more you start to think evil things are beautiful. And the more you think evil things are beautiful, the more you start to think good things are ugly. And that's where their entire backwards moral system comes from, as well as their backwards sense of aesthetic. That's what gets them like siding with the bugs in Starship Troopers over the human beings, for thinking that you can craft a narrative where people will relate with flesh-eating insects over mankind. Because they love ugliness.
Or like, the classic meme. I feel like I bring it up every single show, but it's because it under, you know, the philosophy is what underlies what we're fighting. And it's the meme of the 1950s family that looks happy and they're grilling out, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's, the dad is secretly gay.
You and I are so on the same page that I'm like, everything you say like makes me want to jump in. So I'm sorry, I'm getting too excited. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, but it's just, you know, we're both tuned into something but this is the thing, right? The right doesn't even, we don't need talking points. We don't need instruction from on high. If you're just aligned with the truth, you happen to come up with the same ideas. It's actually a very beautiful thing. They have to believe it's a lie. They have to believe something beautiful and innocent and pure, must have something seething and hateful and disgusting underneath. Otherwise, you know, maybe they're the bad ones. And it's like, it's all about narcissism. It's all about, you know, this love of the self that they think is uplifting when really they're just dragging everybody else down into the mud. I can't believe we've already been talking for an hour. This has flown by. We're going to have to do this again, Seamus. Seamus Coughlin.
I love you, brother.
Was I mispronouncing that? Seamus _ Coughlin?
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine. It happens all the time.
Well, I want to get it right. Seamus _ Coughlin on X. Also on X at freedom_tunes, twistedplots.com, twistedplots.com. Go there today. Help him out. He's doing big thing, folks, and he's been doing it for a long time, so you can trust this guy. I'll vouch for him in case you had any questions, in case after this interview you had any doubt. Seamus, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it.
Dude, God bless you. This has been a blast. I'd love to come on again. Let me know when you're available. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's do it, man. I've been watching you for years. I can't believe this is the first time I've had you on. That's a mistake. We'll make up for that in the future. All right, folks.
Absolutely.
Stay with us. We'll be right back with more. That's Seamus Coughlin, twistedplots.com. Twistedplots.com. Go there today.
You're not going to talk to me and talk over me, non-New York resident. Because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago, I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about, and they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government, and they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, it'll easily be taken off very, very soon. We're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, but I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. We've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are 1997 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com. itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more!
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
bigotry will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, final segment, and I got still so much to talk about. I don't know how I'm going to fit it all in. I'm going to have to pick and choose what I can even show you. I'm going to have to save some of the Pritzker stuff for tomorrow. We've got J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, making some outrageous statements. And, you know, I'd always hear Alex go, you know, the Pritzker family's in all the transgender stuff. And I was like, I'm going to look into that. So I've looked into it. I think I'll save that for tomorrow, though. I think what I'll do right now is get into a very troubling topic, and again, I actually don't know how to deal with this exactly, except in the way that we always have, which is the rising leftist insanity. Like I was saying, Charlie Kirk's murder serves to me as a very distinct turning point in the way people are talking about a lot of political topics these days, but it likewise was a turning point in the left unmasking themselves and showing everybody who they really are. The hatred, the willingness to engage in or justify violence has come out in a way that is really disturbing for people of conscience, people who thought that we were just disagreeing on things, but we're all, you know, human beings at the end of the day. Like, that's not how they see us. And we've known it for a while, but it's really come to the fore recently. And it's actually, again, I don't exactly know how to deal with this. You've got things like Jay Jones for Attorney General. Now, Jay Jones was caught and has been caught like multiple times, sending text messages that are just insane. Just talking about his opponent on the other side of the aisle, saying, I want to kill him, I'd shoot him twice in the head, and I want his, you know, I want him to hold his dead baby before he died. Like, just vicious, evil, horrible stuff. Now, no Democrat, as far as I've seen, has criticized him or distanced themselves from him, which would be disturbing enough, which would be, you know, that's very odd, right? The right wing is willing to throw each other under the bus just because they, you know, sneezed at the wrong time. Like, it's not, very little has to happen for the right wing to throw our people under the bus. Meanwhile, the Democrats are endorsing and encouraging a man who is clearly homicidal in a lot of ways. So what's the most disturbing part about this? It's this right here from Interactive Polls. It is a Virginia poll showing that Jay Jones is up by 1%, and it's from Hart Research. Here's the disturbing part. When asked their impressions of Jay based on what they had read, seen, or heard recently, fully 44% of voters say they feel less favorable towards him compared to 12% more favorable. So at least 12% of people asked found him more favorable for saying that he wanted to kill his opponents. Okay, that's disturbing, knowing a full, you know, more than one out of every 10 people in our country is like, yeah, I want to elect an attorney general that's a homicidal maniac. That sounds good to me. Crazy but true, okay? And this is a common theme throughout the left. This is a disturbing reality that we've known about forever, and it is all of them. I'm telling you, I can't think of a single one that this isn't the case for. Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, every single one of them, when you hear what it's like behind the scenes, you hear that they are vicious, they're brutal, they're heartless, they are like, they're just bad people. They're bad people. Nobody comes out going, you know, she was lovely to work with, right? She was high strung and yeah, sure, she, you know, she really expected a lot of us, but she was fair and hardworking as we were. No, it's all just like, if you mess up a little bit, she goes insane and everybody's pissed off the whole day. I mean, these people, especially the ones who put on the mask of friendliness, who put on the mask of congeniality, they are hiding the most hateful hearts you can imagine. And I'm going to show you some examples of this. And we'll start with the one we were just discussing, Hassan Piker and this poor dog of his. And he denies it. He says it's not a shot caller. I think it's been fairly well proved that it is. What you're about to see is him yelling at his computer while his dog is like laying on a treadmill in the background. And it's like the dog doesn't even do anything wrong. It like gets up to rearrange itself. I've seen a time lapse. I don't know if it's true, but like apparently he was live for like 4 hours before this. The dog doesn't move at all. The first time the dog just
just tries to like get comfortable. This guy's cursing at the dog, and then he reaches over. You can see him like press a button or something, and then the dog yelps and then lays down immediately. And it's like, that dude has a shock collar on that dog. And if the dog stands up, they get shocked. That's horrible. I mean, like, you know, I can understand if you got an out of control dog that's jumping up on things and breaking things and like, okay, you got to get a shock collar. Or if you're doing a limited training regimen that like you're using the shock collar to reinforce things, there's a use for them. But this poor dog, it just tries to stand up and he freaking electroshocks her. This is who these people are. This is the empathetic people. This is the loving people. This is the left, folks. And he's not alone. And it's honestly all of them. Here's one of the worst, Chang's nephew, Hassan Piker, number one streamer on Twitch, communist moron, shocking his dog for standing up. Let's watch.
Of all of America's much more consequential violence, okay?
There's a dog in the background.
It's the same reason as to why step. America, Kaya, please just go, just stop.
It's like, what is your problem, dude?
What are you doing? You're being such a baby.
Standing up, you psycho.
It's just you're making her stressed. I she just literally is so incredibly spoiled from my mom,
dude. I'm telling you, there's not even, let's take it down. It's like there's not even really anything to like explain or explore. It's like, no, he's just evil. He's just a bad dude. He's just evil. This poor dog tries to stand up. He's just like, what is wrong with you? Shocks the poor dog. And the people are like, oh, you're probably making him stressed. Yeah, he's literally sitting there like yelling at his computer, yelling F America, and for like 6 hours. This poor dog, you know how dogs are with human emotion. They absorb it. If you're nervous, your dog's nervous. If you're angry, your dog's angry. Anytime I yell, my dog like cowers, thinks it's at her. That's who these people are. It's not just Hassan Piker. It's not just Kamala Harris. It's not just Joe Biden. They all get like this. Remember during the campaign, we can bring this down now, guys. During the campaign, Joe Biden, like any time that he would be contradicted at all. Let's go ahead and take down the video, guys. It stopped like 5 minutes ago. Are we frozen here? Anytime anybody contradicted him, he would like snap at them, right? It was always like, oh, how's everybody doing? How's everybody? And then it was like, oh, you know, what about this? And he'd be like, you listen here, you dog faced pony soldier. Like that's what's hiding under all of them. And so, you know, I think the way we've been handling this so far is the right way, because I also see corresponding with this, a lot of people waking up to this and a lot of people going, yeah, those aren't my people. I got to find somebody else. And the right wing is decent and the right wing is actually loving. And we might be a little bit brash and we might be a little bit offensive at times, but underlying it is a genuine love for humanity and a genuine compassion for our fellow human being. Not so with the left. So, you know, I encourage people to stay on the path. As we see the left become more violent, as we see them become more outrageous and more offensive and more aggressive, don't fall for that. Don't meet them there. It might feel good. It might sound good, right? I get called racist. I am going to be racist. I get that that's a lot of people's response and I sympathize with it to a certain degree, but you have to understand it's not about them. These people are lost. They're fallen. They're evil. They are scumbags that like don't deserve your anger. I mean, who the hell are they? You're going to let them make you angry? You're going to let some scumbag idiot ruin your day? Why? Stay the course. Remember, we are the loving side. We are the side that genuinely wants the best for people. And there's millions of people out there right now that are seeing that are looking at the two sides and going, everybody calls the right wing bad, but they're really not. And while I know a lot of people on the right just get frustrated and just go, hey, if they're doing it to us, we do it to them. I think that's ill-advised. I think we just need to stay the course and remain the good guys, always the good guys. Katie Porter, I don't even I got so many videos of this lady. It's unbelievable. Let's just go to some of the best. Actually, before we do that, let's go to clip 15 here. This is another leftist. It's another leftist saying another horrible thing, being justified by another leftist. This is who they are, folks. Let's go to clip 15 here.
Well, somebody on your network got shit canned.
I think the official term was
let go.
Okay, this is... Matthew Dowd said, you can't be saying these awful words and then not expect awful actions to take place. Yes, you can. I do expect that. I do not expect awful actions to take place. I think this is awful when you open this window. Like, I didn't like what he said, and what he said was vile and this and that. Irrelevant. Irrelevant. We don't shoot people in this country, and we don't defend it, and we don't mock their death.
You know, and it's like, okay... I like what it's what Nick Fuentes said in his video right after Charlie Kirk was murdered. He said, you know, the real dividing lines between people that are vicious and heartless and evil and they want collective punishment and they want you dead, and the people who understand that we need to be able to communicate with each other, who is as hard as we might fight them, value human life and value this beautiful civilization we have where differences can be handled with words. And in that dichotomy, Bill Maher's on our side, firmly on our side. I can disagree with him about a lot of things. I can think he's an idiot. I think he falls for lies a lot of the time. But at the end of the day, he's on our side, and this Dowd guy isn't. Words are violence. They've been running with that for years, and we're seeing the outcome of that. Let's go to Katie Porter. Let's go to clip 36 here, because this may be the best example of it, because you can see the niceness and the happiness and the friendly face, and you see it dissolve in an instant when her underling dares to make a mistake. Watch this. Is an editor's note obtained
by
Politico.
Stat number two?
I am.
All right. $632. $632, which is how much you save in fuel and maintenance costs when you replace your traditional car with an EV, with an electric vehicle. So I drive, I lease a Chevy Bolt. It is the best car that I have ever owned. I just plug it into the garage, 3-hole prong plug, and I never have to go to the gas station.
That's awesome. And $632 is real money. And I know here at UCI, we have a National Fuel Center Research Center, and they're also doing work on how to make electric vehicles affordable, including for low and moderate income people, working moms, single moms like me, people who really could benefit from an extra $632 in their pocket. And it's also not just the individual savings, but it's also the total savings for our economy. So I'm on the oversight committee, you might know, and that is where we did a study recently this fall in September. And what it showed is if we don't electrify our transportation sector, that we're going to lose more than 500,000 Californians dying prematurely to air pollution and other problems. And the state could lose four. Get out of my shot.
I wanted to tell you that that's actually incorrect. It's not that it's electric vehicles. It's that if we don't meet the commitments under the Paris Climate Accord.
Okay. It does. Okay. You also were in my shot before that. Stay out of my shot. Okay. I'm going to start again with electric vehicle saving us money.
Perfect.
Okay.
Can you even imagine? Can you even imagine working for a woman like that? It's so funny. I mean, my boss has a reputation for, you know, having a bit of a temper, you might say. Could you ever imagine Alex Jones doing that to one of his crew members? Get the F out of my shot. I mean, it's just like the hatred, the seething hatred, and that mask of congeniality just sheds away. And it's like this video came out, and it made a big splash, and then another video came out, and then another video came out. And then this woman is just like this. This is who she is. Now, she is the front runner for the governorship of California. Get the F out of my effing shot. Katie Porter tears into staffer in newly released video. The former member of Congress, who's now running for California governor, also vented that she was snubbed by the Biden White House, complaining she raised the president a blank ton of money. And it goes on and on. Let's go to clip 40 here. Same candidate, gubernatorial candidate, Katie Porter, death stares to her staff during a Zoom meeting because they messed up her lighting. Oh, her all-important lighting. Let's watch.
I need the lights off, the bright lights. I'm so sorry, but I am about to get on. Bernard, I need you to turn these off. These that are killing me. Hang on 1 second, everybody.
No, we should put the computer up on the
phone. Yes, yes, we should have. Yeah. Yes. Okay, everybody, I'm not that dark.
It's too dark.
She's so mad.
Just a minute.
It's almost like... It's almost like when your mom is mad at you and then she answers the phone and is like, hello. She goes, I'm like, you don't mess with the, hi, Smith residence. You know, it's like, no, we're just working on the lights here. Get up right now. Just trying to figure it out. It's like, dude, imagine having to work for this fallen spirit. Let's go to clip 19 here. So she goes on the Bill Maher program and just gets completely eviscerated, has no idea what she stands for. It stands for nothing at all. And just gets completely blown out of the water. This is the front runner to replace Gavin Newsom. This is Gavin Newsom's, you know, chosen replacement for the Democratic Party. And she's as dumb as she is mean. Let's go to clip 19 here.
He should be able to have a civil debate. Nobody, including Riley Gaines, who I disagree with strongly, should be.
What do you disagree with out of interest?
I think that it should be up to sporting bodies to make the decisions about who and
how
should
compete. What has she said that's actually wrong?
I think that what she has done is try to turn this. We talked about people, you know, becoming, using things to kind of get likes and get clicks.
That's not what she's doing. I've got no truck for Riley Gaines personally, but all I've seen her do is stand up for women's rights to fairness and equality.
Well, she actually
competed against Leah Thomas, and it was obviously unfair. Leah Thomas won one of the races in the NCAA championships by 50 seconds against a bunch of biological females who simply couldn't keep up. That cannot be right. It cannot be fair.
That is something that I trust. I think our sporting bodies should be dealing with. And by the way, Riley is speaking up for herself, and that is her prerogative, and I respect her free speech.
I think she's speaking up for pretty much every female athlete in the world.
I mean, wasn't that the point of Title IX in the early 70s? Was something that was a major event in feminism, that we finally have this law that says at colleges, right, and I think high schools too, but definitely colleges, women's sports have to be given equal to men's sports so that women aren't getting, you know, and this led to the WNBA and lots of other stuff. This seems to be the opposite of that. It seems to be so many instances, I think, where wokeness is the opposite of what I grew up as liberalism. Liberalism was, let's give the women an equal shot. Let's put a male in the swimming pool with the women. I don't get it.
It's crazy. And meanwhile, trans people who genuinely want to compete at athletics and swimming or whatever it may be, they're the ones who are suffering here. They need to
long story short, she gets completely blown out of the water, has absolutely nothing to say.
Like I said, there's one or two answers.
As dumb as she is mean. Let's go to clip number 11 here. This is also her on Bill Maher. Let's watch.
A bad judgment.
Right, but the real scandal is not that he wants to do it.
It's kind of old.
What?
And right now. I mean, let's be clear.
Sorry?
Yeah. It's such
kids
a bullshit.
Kids are immature. That's why they're kids.
Not at 21. Not all
yes,
over the world.
21 year olds are immature. That's why we don't drink until they're 21. That's why some of us don't think that 20 year olds or 19 year olds ought to be able to go get AR-15s.
They can go fight.
I think there are
arguments.
They
can be in the army.
Well, I think that's a discussion we should have because I think
they
the more
vote.
We know about
I thought if you vote, you should be able to have a certain level of maturity.
All right, so Grimace from the McDonald's friends is very angry that they aren't accepting her utter nonsense here. By the way, there's a late breaking thing. Alex Jones joins us via Zoom to talk about the latest indictment from the Trump administration. Letitia James has been indicted. Alex, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's right. Where they're looking at Kamala Harris 2.0, even stupider than her. I know I've got a bad connection, so I'm just going to go audio here for you guys. But remember everybody saying that I was wrong, that indictments were coming 6 months ago. And I specifically said it would be Comey at the federal level, at the Fed being indicted, and that it would be Letitia James at the state level being indicted by the feds because it's the most cut and dry. Now I predict the next will be Jack Smith, and then it will be John Brennan, and then it will be Fannie Willis. Everybody write this down. I'm batting 1,000 right now. Rob Dew, I just called him 5 minutes ago. He was able to instantly type in, Alex Jones predicts James Comey will be first, Letitia James, the Soros prosecutor, Second, I didn't even have this from sources. I knew who grand juries were open on, but I know who has the most cut and dry cases. And this just opens the whole thing up. So truly tomorrow's news today, just so listeners continue to understand we're not playing games here. But she has been indicted for bank fraud. And from my sources, what's coming next is open tax evasion and the mortgage fraud. But they caught her cut and dry on the bank fraud. So this is a big deal. They got Al Capone on income tax, even though he probably ordered over 1,000 people killed. So we'll get these guys any way we can. She put out a video. Oh, it's revenge. Oh, she ran on creating false charges against Trump, and her cases were pure garbage. So you talk about biblical reap what you sow. You talk about what comes around goes around. You talk about karma. This is it. But again, InfoWars, tomorrow's news today. She had the Southern District of New York, even though she's the state attorney general, open up multiple investigations on me. And my lawyers asked me never to talk about it until the cases were closed, and they still asked me not to. But one of them was the Silver case. We never said it cured COVID. We've always sold colloidal and silver wound gel and stuff. We simply pointed out it was in the mainline literature that it kills viruses in 1 second. Well, so does sunlight. And they went, oh, my God. So they tried to indict me. It cost me $500,000. Right. Had to appear before the grand jury digitally, give them all the files. That was one little gift that she instituted. This woman is a monster. I've had over 7 grand juries open nationwide on me. And by the grace of God, even though they usually indict a ham sandwich, in leftist jurisdictions, D.C., New York, you name it, they never indicted me because the juries are like, what did he do? And of course, but with her, this is absolutely totally cut and dry. So there is a God, praise Lord Jesus, Letitia James, the literal Soros opera. We can pull the clips up and play them tomorrow on my show. You think you ought to, that open morning show with her saying, I don't know what he's done, but I'm going to indict him once I get in. Well, you failed. And now she's whining, saying this is weaponization. This is literally what she did, except with her, what, 4 houses all claiming they're primary residence? I mean, this woman, they had Trump indicted for saying Mar-a-Lago was worth $200 million. They had offers for $1 billion. He bought it for more than $18 million 40 years ago. They sold a 2-acre lot for $200 million next door. Of course, the damn thing's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And all his bank loans were paid back. So, this is absolutely amazing. And we called it again. Tomorrow's news today. We're getting the clips together. We'll post them on X right now. I said, first coming, then Letitia James. And now I'm saying, Jack Smith is next. Great job, Harrison Smith. Love you and the crew. Keep it up, folks. Remember, we can't do this without you. Yeah, we're winning the race, but we're down to the last mile. Don't forget about us. Right now, massive mega sale, 1997 for all the T-shirts and apparel for 18 or 28 years of Infowars.com, 31 years on air total. Buy one bottle of the amazing sea moss, get a second bottle free. Can't do it without you folks. This is an Infowar. We're paying off. We're delivering. So support us right now in the mega sale. And with this huge new line of the veterans of the Infowar sale at thealexjonesstore.com, be the reason we're always on the air. God bless you all. Harrison Smith, take over. Letitia James, as I predicted, the second indictment. I want everybody that says never be indicted. Eat crow, black pillars. Eat crow. Haven't seen certain people that used to, who I love, used to host the slot you're in, that laugh and said, you'll never happen. You're wrong. When it happens, I'll make you right. Haven't heard them say that yet. All right. God bless you all.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling the same way about Trump getting peace in Gaza, indictments coming down the line. I mean, we really are in a season of change here in a really magnificent way. And I'd completely forgotten all the other crap Tish James was involved in. Thank you, Alex, for reminding me. Yeah, she came after us about the silver stuff. I think she's responsible for VDare being basically bankrupted. Like, she got into office and then just immediately weaponized her position against everybody and anybody she could. Donald Trump was her main target, but anybody else in the alternative media sphere came under her scrutiny, like the eye of Sauron, trying to find anything that they could get us on. Of course, the process is the punishment. They don't have to get a conviction. They don't have to, you know, destroy the company, as long as they can get you to spend $500,000 defending yourself, and then you can't sell that product anymore out of, you know, caution. It's like, this is the way they operate. And then they have the temerity, they have the gall to say that the government is being weaponized against them. It's just,
I'm very happy to see this. I feel like for the first time in Trump's second administration, we're seeing real movement on a lot of really important things. A fire seems to be lit under Donald Trump, and whether it's Antifa or the wars overseas or the indictments here, things are finally happening, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.
Why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you showed
up. Is that the way to talk?
You showed up. You voted.
You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks. Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans.
Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the deep state want you and I to shut up. But we're not going to shut up. That's why on top of the giant sale we've got going, Veterans of the InfoWar right now, you get an additional 10% off at checkout at thealexshowstore.com with promo code Hakeem. Because no, Hakeem, we're not going to shut up. And when Americans and others back InfoWars and this operation and what we're doing, they are literally defending the tip of the spear. This is the media operation the globalists and the left hate the most. We can't do this without your support. So please help keep us on the air and really say no to Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these people by going to thealexshowstore.com for the best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel, and gear. Promo code Hakeem to get 10% off right now.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app. And tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.